Log Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from Houston, Texas. So we had another event this evening that we're going to be talking about. Rex, you want to tee us up here?
Yeah, we had a fantastic event tonight. It was the free and equal debate from Chicago that was broadcasting with the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson, the Constitution Party candidate Virgil Goode, and the Green Party candidate Jill Stein, and the Justice Party candidate Rocky Anderson. And it was actually a debate, Tex, unlike the little staged show between the two tepid little whores that we saw last night. We actually saw a debate between candidates who actually discussed serious issues and didn't always exactly agree on keeping statism rolling. Did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I watched. I was a little confused because this was supposed to be a debate, but yet there were parts of it where they didn't all agree. And so when I watched last night the debate, I think debates are where you basically are vastly in agreement, and then you do like a bunch of political posturing, and you have to turn your body and keep it focused in one position for most of the hour. And so I wasn't prepared for this. You know, I don't know that this was a debate because they actually didn't agree, and I didn't notice who was focused totally on their opponent as if they were some sort of psychotic robot that needed to be oiled because it couldn't turn in another direction. That's what I thought debates were.
Yeah, I think we've been conditioned by the Commission on Presidential Debates to assume that basically it's just an interview where the only two candidates feign to disagree or feign to actually have a different agenda, when in fact they agree on everything other than which one of them should have the job. Now, you know,
the esoterica of the Ryan Biden debate over the 2014 withdrawal date from Afghanistan, where they went on at length, and the big point of disagreement is I wouldn't have told anybody
right.
when we were pulling out, but otherwise
yeah.
we're totally down with that. You know, everything's okay. No disagreement, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, basically in these, quote, so-called debates, they tinker around the edges and play rhetorical points to their base when they actually roll on the same things. I mean, you look at Obama and Romney with this whole alleged foreign policy debate. You know, they're both for occupying countries. They're both for wars. They're both for funding other countries. They're both for rattling sabers. They're both for selling arms everywhere. They're both basically for trying to maintain this crumbling empire. And the reason it's a crumbling empire is all empires crumble, which is why our founding fathers gave us a republic. Conversely, what we saw tonight, which was probably shocking to most Americans, and unfortunately, I would argue that a lot of Americans didn't see it, although they should, and you can still check it out. It is available online, so look it up. It'll probably be on YouTube. You can find it on Twitter. You can find it on Facebook. You can go to freeandequal.org. And actually, before we go any further, let me just point out real quick, it is very important for everybody to go to freeandequal.org tell your friends, tell them on Twitter, tell them on Facebook, tell them through email, tell them in person, because Free and Equal is doing another debate in the heart of the beast, Washington, D.C., next week, October 30th, the day before Halloween, with two candidates. Now, they're not doing it two because they've picked two. They're doing it two because they want to get it deeper into the issues. And what they're doing is they're letting those of us who saw the debate tonight go to their website and vote. It is very likely that Gary Johnson will garner a lot of votes, but it is very important that people go and vote for Virgil Goode, because then we can have a real debate. Unfortunately, as much as I'm for a multitude of voices, there's not all that much difference between Dr. Stein and Mayor Anderson, and frankly, they're both socialists, so I would rather they not speak, but if they have that privilege, then I'm not going to silence them, but I would rather see a really good debate between Johnson and Goode. Do you agree, Tex?
Yeah, and where you go is basically spelled out freeandequal.org, O-R-G, and then the link you click is where it says live debate stream in red under the blue banner, and that goes to the survey, and then you've got drop-down boxes to rank your number one, two, and three. And so if you do want to see Virgil Goode and Gary Johnson discuss the issues, I would put Virgil Goode first, because Gary Johnson has a whole bunch of Ron Paul people going to support him, and you know how, you know, Ron Paul people, they always win the internet polls. So Gary Johnson's going. The thing is, if you want to see Virgil Goode and not two insane people talk, then you probably want to put Virgil Goode first. Interesting debate in the sense that I thought that, Gary Johnson and Virgil Goode, I thought they did a good job presenting their issues. And, you know, Virgil Goode, the nice thing about him is, you know, he took a lot of controversial stances and he didn't back down. Like, this is what I think, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat what I'm saying because, you know, I have an audience that may be hostile to some of the things that I believe, and I appreciate that. When it came to the Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein, man, wow, you know, I mean, a lot of crazy stuff. I mean, I'll say this. When they got to the issue of legalization of marijuana, explicitly marijuana, you know, I tend to be for that just because I think that it's a whole other topic that we can get into. But even though I'm for that, I don't think you should be debating while on the substance. Some of their answers seem a little far out to me, you know, a little freaky. So, you know, one thing, you know, this is the first time that, you know, you sort of, it's like you hear a dog whistle and your head, you know, kind of turns to the side like, hey, what was that? Rocky Anderson said, no one is talking about catastrophic climate change. You know, and how we're going to address this. And this is something that kept coming. It's like big to him, like catastrophic climate change. You know, okay, I got a theory on that as to why no one's talking about it, because we are likely not the cause of that, and there is no cause and effect relationship between what we're doing and, you know, changing the climate. The actual, if you look at the statistical correlation between temperature and CO2, it's damn near zero, okay? It's not completely zero. That would mean there's absolutely no correlation. It's an intensifier, but it's pretty damn well close to zero, because there have been tons of carbon in the atmosphere when it's been really freaking cold on the planet, right? And there's been limited amounts of CO2 when it's been really freaking hot, okay? So CO2 doesn't control the temperature of the planet. It has a lot more to do with the output from the sun and solar radiation, well, cosmic radiation being, you know, received from the rest of the galaxy, because our sun pushes out photons, sort of like, think of it like a stream of water, you know, like a garden hose. And the rest of these stars in our galaxy are also shooting out photons, right? And at some place called the heliopause, these photons shooting out from the sun and the photons coming in from all the other suns in the galaxy, they sort of, you know, come together and they form like a Vulcan photon meld where they're just fighting to try to get through, right? And eventually, if the sun, of course, you know, we talk about the vacuum of space, it's not like they all collide into each other, but some of them certainly do. And some of the cosmic radiation gets through. We are susceptible to cosmic radiation. But if the solar output drops a little bit, we get more cosmic radiation. It creates clouds up in the upper atmosphere, which tends to have a graying and shielding and cooling effect on us. Anyway, I won't go into that too much, but even, you know, what, so how are you going to address that? Oh, I'm going to elect this guy. He's going to go change solar radiation. He's going to go fix the sun. You know, what are we going to do to the sun? We're going to put a big umbrella up in front of it, or how are you going to fix that, man? Let's go to the
floating mirrors.
Let's go to the galactic core. We can fix this thing. Give me a budget of $500 trillion bajillion, and I can go to the galactic core. I could fix our global warming problem.
There you go.
Anyway, so I don't know.
Yeah, that was crazy, Tex. I agree with you.
It's not a problem you can address, and there is not a government bureaucracy that either exists or that you could create that, if you give it enough money, could actually change the temperature of the planet.
Although Mitt Romney can change the temperature of a room. It gets real cold when he shows up.
Yeah, exactly. and then Jill Anderson, you know, the thing, no, it's not Jill Anderson, Jill Stein. Stein.
Stein, Anderson, whatever. They were both the same.
You know, Jillian Anderson.
Bunch of bitchy little girls.
The truth
What's
is
that?
Out there. Jillian Anderson. The truth is out there. Anyway.
Are you talking about the X-Files?
I don't know. I don't know why.
That's a different Dr. Jill.
Yeah. I think I just confused the two last names. But so then she said something, you know, she kind of went on about all these sort of catchphrases and words and stuff where, you know, seems like a nice lady. Doesn't seem like a deep thinker to me, you know. A lot of hearts. Not a lot of head going on there. You know, it's just not thinking too much. And so she said something about, this is the direct quote that I got, she's going to fight for, or some wind-up to this, or she's advocating the peaceful, just, green future we deserve. Oh.
Huh?
The peaceful, just, green future that we deserve.
What?
A unicorn in every pot, everyone. A unicorn in every pot, you know? Every man a king, a unicorn in every pot. What? I don't even know what that is.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
What was she talking about, Peg?
You know,
did you understand her?
No. I mean, it's like people are like, what happened to you? You don't want a peaceful, just, green future. I don't know what the hell that is. That's why I'm like, I don't know what this is. It's just a bunch of words that don't strung together that don't have any meaning. You know,
it's socialist
you
code.
Can't just,
it's socialist
yeah,
code.
You can't just string a bunch of words together and expect people to understand, yeah, I want a peaceful, just, green future. What? I mean, can I get, you know, like a side of potatoes with that? Or, you know, what the hell are you talking about? You know?
Green eggs and ham, Sam, I am. Tex, before we get too heavy into the Jill Stein bashing, I just want to let all of our liberal listeners and any of your liberal friends know, Jill Stein is a fine, upstanding physician, and I strongly encourage you to vote for her instead of Barack Hussein Obama. She's actually a liberal. She's actually on the left of the spectrum. So I would strongly recommend that you take a close look at Jill Stein if you're considering voting for Barack Obama, and I think she deserves your vote far more than he does.
Operation Water Cooler. Get to the office tomorrow and talk to all your liberal friends who've been annoying the shit out of you for, like, your entire life. And then just start hitting them up with, like, Jill Stein and how, yeah, we could get green jobs. They're like, green jobs? What are you talking about? That's a Green New Deal. Green New Deal? I like things that are green. That's why I read Incredible Hulk comic books. And it's like, yeah, it's a new deal. Oh, my God, I like Franklin Roosevelt because I like deals and I like them to be new. Every time I get a deal, I want it to be a new one. This one's green? Yeah. And Jill Stein's all about it. So you should vote for the Green Party. And then they run off and then you tell them, hey, she's going to give you a unicorn in every pot. And they're like, a unicorn? I can always use a unicorn. I always wanted one. I love ponies. And then they go back to their desk and they go vote for Jill Stein instead of Barack Obama.
Yes. I think that that would be a wonderful thing because we clearly don't want Barack Obama reelected, but we also don't want Mitt Romney elected. So Jill Stein is a wonderful compromise for all you liberal-minded people. I like the fact that we're getting a few things out of the way. I mean, I don't really want to spend 2 hours talking about Rocky Anderson. So let's just get him out of the way and Jill Stein and also this whole, you know, drug thing, because clearly Virgil Goode was the only one with a different position vis-a-vis drugs. And frankly, since, legalization or decriminalization of marijuana is like item, you know, 982 on the list of important things that we got to get to, I say that we probably leave that one alone. But I found it interesting that Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein agreed on quite a few things. I found it fantastic that all of them were in agreement regarding civil liberties, both the, quote, left candidates and the right candidates. But I did find that Anderson and Jill Stein were all on about, you know, we don't need austerity. We need to fund education. We need to give people free shit. We don't have any money, so we can't give people free crap, even wonderful things like education. And frankly, it's overpriced because of the monetary debasement. It's overpriced because of the bureaucratic mess and the false demand. Let's be clear about a few things. Most people do not need a higher education in order to have a fulfilling life and a functioning career in enough money to survive.
Look,
and if they do, then they should pay for it.
and this is the thing that's driving me crazy. I had to switch my input device because of problems on the other one, so please bear with me. You know, the thing about the student loan debate that's driving me crazy is they're saying, hey, you know, student loans are so expensive to go to college, and I'm not even sure if I go and I take out all these loans and everything to afford it that it's going to pay off and all this kind of stuff. Okay, well, why is that? I'll tell you the reason that's happening. It's because of the very student loan program itself.
Mm-hmm. Artificial demand.
No matter how much college costs, the government will give you the money. You know why? Government just prints its own money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it says, hey, now we have enough money to afford your college education. So, boom, there you go, kid. And we don't know if your college education is actually worth that money or not, but we assume you're responsible enough at the tender age of 18 to figure out how many hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt you should go in order to get that degree in sociology. So here's a bunch of money, right? And so you know what the university does? It says, hey, these kids, they don't even have this money. They just get it from the government. The government just creates it out of thin air. And so you know what we could do? We could jack up the price. And the price of college education has gone through the roof over the past, you know, two-plus decades now as a result of the continued expansion of the student loan program. And actually, if you wanted a real winner stock back in the 90s, when they made it so that you can't get rid of your student loan debt through declaring bankruptcy, which student loan debt is now like the largest debt that people, mm-hmm. pretty much young people owe, you know, beyond even mm-hmm. their house in some cases and beyond their credit cards, the student loan debt, you can't discharge that debt. You're just stuck forever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the winner stock you wanted to buy back in the 1990s was Sallie Mae. It said appreciated in value, I don't know, something like 9,000% or something.
You don't want to buy it now, though. Buying it now is like buying Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, like, you know, in early 2008.
this news is about, you know, 10 years too late. So,
yeah.
I also wouldn't buy American Auto Gyro stock, you know, those Auto Gyro stuff. They didn't have a big future. And get out of blimps. If you're in blimps, get out of blimps.
Not Romney's taking care of that. But I thought it was interesting that they were in agreement on, you know, the fact that, you know, there are some things that we have to spend money on, and that Rocky Anderson felt that global climate change was a larger threat than, crashing economy and extreme Muslim jihadists who want to kill Americans. But either way, let's kind of move on from him. But I got to tell you, Tex, I found two things that Jill Stein said. They're actually very interesting and very poignant. Number one,
Rex, on the student loan thing, maybe we can close that one out before we move on to the next one?
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to say that the left-leaning people, which would be Jill Stein and, Rocky Anderson.
Rocky and Bullwinkle. Rocky Anderson.
Exactly. They were saying, you know, I'll expand the program. Well, you'll increase the amount of money that's flowing into a system that's taking advantage of the fact that there's an infinite amount of money in the system to jack up the price. And then the student goes through and he goes through the system, right, thinking that his government and his betters know what's best for them and they're helping him out. Really what they're doing is they're laden him with debt or her. And as they come through, and increasingly it's her that's graduating, not him necessarily, so loading her up with debt, and when she comes out, she turns out that the job she gets as a result of that education can't pay for the level of debt she was given by the government, and they're going to expand that program. And so I think Rachel Good and Johnson have the right answer, which is no. First, we don't have the money. We're creating it out of thin air. But it's not like the government creates it out of thin air, but don't worry, it's the government. You're on the hook for it because you know how the government can create it out of thin air? Because the banks give it to them because the government is telling them, don't worry, we'll get it from the people in the form of taxes. And if they don't pay, we'll send the muscle out. The IRS, they'll crack some freaking heads. We'll get that money. Like, okay, yeah, sure, you can have as much money as you want. Just go crack those heads.
And they can't declare bankruptcy. And we have 16,000 new IRS agents armed with hundreds of thousands of and millions of hollow point bullets. So you're guaranteed to collect on your investment.
Did you take me down 101? Please.
Hey, Tex, though, didn't Johnson say something about a lottery that paid for college for students in New Mexico when he was governor?
Yeah, he did talk about that.
That kind of concerned me a little bit because, it seemed like he was talking out of both sides of his mouth on that one. I got a little concerned. I haven't done the research, so I'm not going to comment, but I just found it interesting that on the one hand he's saying, well, we're not going to give it to everybody. We'll just put a certain sum of money aside, and whoever's lucky enough to draw that number will get the free education that everybody else pays for, but I'm not going to put a program in place because we're going broke. I just thought that was a lot.
Why not let the free market determine the price? I mean, I don't know how far you guys got along in economics, man, but we did a thing about tax caps, right, which is tax caps in New York. They got set fixed prices that they can charge and all this kind of stuff, and as a result of that, they don't want to go into bad neighborhoods, right? Because I get the same fare if I go into a bad neighborhood as if I go into a good neighborhood, right? If I go into the bad neighborhood, I may get killed, right? But if you're in the bad neighborhood and you want to get the hell out of the bad neighborhood, you ain't getting out of there because no cab's coming there, right? But if the free market dictated and you're like, hey, you know what? I'll pay you $20 extra, $10 extra. I don't care. Get me the hell out of here, right?
Yep.
You could get out, but you can't now because it's all the same. So see how equal it is? See, that's why you got a bullet in your chest and you're laying in a pool of blood in an alley somewhere because someone's saving you $5 on that fare home. I'd have paid $5, but anyway.
And Tex, you know, oftentimes people misunderstand this and they think that what you just made was a cold-hearted statement that poor people shouldn't have as much access to things because it'll cost them more. Or, for example, if you're in a hurricane zone and the government puts in restrictions on price gouging, therefore the lumber sellers cannot increase the cost of plywood so it stays at the same price so that everybody can afford it, and what you end up is with a shortage. Whereby if you were actually let the market set the price in an acute emergency like that, prices would go up dramatically. But guess what that would mean? It would mean that the guy in the next town who's not going to be affected by the disaster for twice the price would actually deliver more plywood to your neighborhood instead of just saying, well, screw it, I'm not going to drive all the way over there to sell them for the same price I can sell them here where I'm safe. And that's the fundamental problem with that understanding economics. If you let the free market set the price, then the goods will go to their highest and best use, and it actually furthers the common good far greater than the shortages created by price fixing, which is something clearly Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein did not understand, especially regarding these student loans. But what I did find interesting that she said, number one, she pulled this number out. And again, since this thing just happened, I have not verified this stuff. Maybe we'll get to it later. But she said that 90 million Americans eligible to vote aren't voting. That's fantastic. So I think that instead of going after all of these party morons who are going to vote for the jersey no matter what asshole is wearing it, maybe it's time to start finding and going after these people who just unplug from the system and get them excited about some of these candidates. You know some of these people. Get them awake. Let's get them to get there. The other thing, which I found interesting about her, she said that people give up power because they don't know they have it. And that's echoing something you and I have been saying, which is that we have the power to fix this. The oligarchs do not rule us. We give them power by giving them our consent, by voting for the lesser of two evils, or beating up our friends who used to be Newt Gingrich supporters to make them vote for Mitt Romney, who sucks, or anything like that. So I thought that was a pretty incredible statement. And I got to tell you, I agree with you. I think she seems like an intelligent woman. Obviously, she's a physician. She seems to be, you know, passionate and committed. I clearly see she's a socialist. So, not my cup of tea.
No grasp of economics or how things work, or the reality of the world. But anyway, yeah. That's not to say she's completely knowledgeable in, you know, some areas or anything. I mean, clearly. But what she was talking about tonight, oh, God, please help me. Why do I have to listen?
Yeah.
And then, you know, she's
all right,
got
Tech, just real quick, we're 25 minutes in, 2-hour show. At the top of the hour, we're going to start taking calls. But right off the bat, we do have someone joining us who probably has some insights because I know he was watching it closely. I was chatting with him. That is Trog from the Coalition of Freedom. Trog,
hey,
did
guys,
you watch
you
this thing?
Yes, sir.
And so we're trying to get to the Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson topic off the table so we can get into the other one. So any commentary on either one of those? Any commentary there?
I think both of you guys are nailing it. I think they're what they are. I mean, I did the very in-depth breakdown of the third-party response to the second debate. So I had, I hadn't transcribed their comments out, so I had enough of them last week on that, and all they were doing was just reconfirming that they're both out there in la-la land. So I agree with both of you on that. I really would like to see a debate between Johnson and Good. That's what I would like to see, because you got two constitutionalists there, and one is, you know, social liberal, and one is social conservative, and that would be a debate.
Well,
I agree.
And Trog, one of the things that I was going to say, you know, another one of those moments where you were like, what? Was when they were talking about the NDAA, or the NDAA for this year, right? Because there's always an NDAA, which
right.
is why if you ask candidates, are you against the NDAA? They're probably like, what?
No.
Because you have to fund the, then you're like, no, this specific provision of this specific one in this year. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah. Anyway, so they were talking about the NDAA, and that she said that, she kind of had a rambling answer, and then she said, also, it's unallowable and against the principles of liberty. Okay, so she had this long answer, and what she comes down to. At no point in that conversation did she ever mention the Constitution.
Yeah.
You watch that whole debate, I don't think she ever said the word the Constitution.
No.
Like, I don't even think she knows it exists or what it is, or if she does, she's afraid of it because it limits government's ability to do stupid things like a new Green Deal or a Green New Deal
right.
or a deal that's new.
Whatever she said it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. She's pure communist. Rocky at least talks about the Constitution and civil liberties from a constitutional position and the war.
But only there, Trog. Only there.
Yeah.
Everything
yeah, no,
else he's off,
mean,
off book. But on those, you're absolutely right. I think the best answer to that whole thing, I would have to give it, Virgil Good.
Yeah.
And he had the best answer. Remember his answer?
Simple. Yeah.
He just said, I would veto it.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. It doesn't get better than that. Yeah, it's unconstitutional. Veto the damn thing.
Yeah.
I was let me ask you guys something on this, because this is something I need your input on, because I'm just totally dumbfounded. You know this policy mic that has some articles here and there that we pass around? I'm reading who won the third party debate, and I'm scrolling down real quick as I'm listening, and a guy says Virgil Good's answer, stop immigration until unemployment is under 5%, question, question, term limits, question, question, sorry, pal, but that's a disaster. What the hell does that mean?
Well, that's one of those things where people don't want to define anything. They just want to throw words out there.
Yeah. How sad is this ask? You know, Yes, and sorry, I'm on an alternate input device that actually will sense if you guys are talking, and it will prioritize you guys coming through to me rather than me going out to you. So I only have to put up with it for about 15 more minutes or so. But the thing about that is, you know, this is what members of the black community are saying, which is unemployment in the black community right now is much higher than in the population at large. Unemployment in the black community, people under 30, I believe, is about 24%, right? So if you have all these, you know, people coming in either A, illegally, or even legally via green cards, right? they're saying, oh, this is a brain drain, and we're getting the smartest people in the world, right? So this is good for the country. Yeah, well, it's bad if you're an American and you live here and you're paying into the system and you're fighting and struggling and striving to get through, right? And the government created terrible public schools, right, that are not teaching people, but finally you get to the higher education system, which is the best in the world, right? And then you go and you have to make up for the fact that you didn't learn anything, you know, when you were in the public schools, you barely learned anything, right? And now you have to, you know, compete and survive in the main system, and you come out, and now the entire world is coming trying to compete for your job, right? And you know what? The people overseas, I've been overseas, I've been to every single continent on this planet except Australia, right? Well, and Antarctica. But, you know, I've seen the conditions that they live in China and that they live in India. I mean, I've seen people, I'm not talking like individuals, I'm talking like villages, essentially, of people living under bridges in India, okay? They're very orderly. They're not necessarily completely crime-ridden. They actually train people in these sort of very difficult situations and all this kind of stuff. But those people, when they go home to do their homework, they're totally motivated to get the hell out of there, right? So they study all the time. They don't have, like, a video game or like a cool new movie out. You know, they're sitting there, they're memorizing everything, right? So they're really good. And now you're going to tell an American who's been paying into the system his entire life, he's got to go compete against this person, right? And you're prioritizing them coming in. And so within the black community, they're saying, hey, look, all this illegal immigration, we need to stop that because these people are coming in, they're undercutting wages, and then they're getting jobs, and we are not, right?
Yep.
And with all the green cards coming in, the skilled labor now is going to foreigners as well. Well, what, as an American trying to, you know, work within our system, how are you going to survive in that? Oh, and by the way, we just tripled the cost of education or quintupled the cost of education because we keep giving free money into the system. Now, when you come out, you've got a bajillion dollars worth of debt, whereas the person overseas, they went to their state school, which probably was either A, free or super cheap because they actually had to pay for it themselves. So they come here and they're not burdened with that debt.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we killing ourselves? Why are we doing this?
Well, it's obviously intentional, Tex. I mean, it's intentional. This is an intentional agenda by the corporatists that are running the Democrats and the Republicans in order to keep us from climbing. Because if you have a growing, educated middle class, not only are they economically powerful and literate, but they're also inclined to question things such as their civil liberties being taken away or being utilized as a funding mechanism for a global empire. And so you've got to get rid of the middle class by burdening them to the point where they are just struggling to survive, and therefore you can get away with all sorts of stuff that you would otherwise not be able to get away with. What I find fascinating, and this is where the libertarian argument for absolute, you know, free markets in some ways tends to fail, because the founding fathers created a free trade zone within the United States. But they did not create a free trade zone globally. Now, there are arguments for tariffs and import restrictions and borders and all that kind of stuff. However, if you really think about it, the first order of business for the federal government is to benefit Americans without necessarily hurting other people. So the idea is that, and I think Virgil Goode's point is absolutely 100% on point, and if someone would actually sit back and think about it, until you get your unemployment well below 5%, which for the most part is as close to full employment as you can actually get at any time because of transitions in skills and jobs and markets and things of that nature, why are you importing more laborers? It needs to stop because we have to take care of our own first. And you're supposed to take care of your own house before you take care of somebody else's. You're not on an airplane, they tell you put the mask over your face before your kids. It's the same thing.
I heard it was $1.2 million a year. And Goode was talking in the other debate, 1.2 million people a year coming into the country on green cards. It was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. And look, when I worked in Congress, the big issue up there, you know, was H-1B visas, right, which is what Microsoft, we need more H-1Bs because we need all these people coming in who can do this stuff. Well, you know, Microsoft, and they've been going on about this. And then if you go look at the election, in 2000, they're talking about H-1B visas. And then, you know, this thing keeps coming back up, right? H-1B visas. And then you got J-1s, right? Where I used to work at DOE, we did J-1s, right, until 9/11, and then we transferred that thing out of there because our office didn't want responsibility for approving anyone's visa. Like, get this task out of here, but J-1's a scientific visa, right? So, you know, they want all these visas and everything. Well, you know, Microsoft, all the people who want this stuff, why don't you go to the schools and set up programs? Like, Microsoft is not a poor company. You could go to universities and set up programs to train people specifically to do the very thing that you want them to do, and you go fund it at the school, and now people are coming and they're signing up voluntarily, and then you hire them at the end of that. And within 4 years, all of a sudden you don't need all the H-1Bs, right? Because you have a skilled, you know, you got a skilled workforce. So, you know, why are we doing this to ourselves? And Congress is like, oh, yeah, well, I want to get all that money from this big company, right? So I want them to contribute to my campaign. And so what I'll do is I'll sell my vote on this issue to them in exchange for them contributing to my campaign. Well, they don't actually do that because that would be bribery. But that's actually what they do. So, you know, it's
not bribery unless it's actually bribery. That's just, you know, greasing the wheels.
Yeah, it's just bribery by another name. But anyway, it's not bribery, you know, not with like a
It's managed bribery.
Yeah,
managed
exactly.
bribery.
Just, you know, money among friends, you know, in exchange for favorable opinions and votes towards what I want. But, yeah, there's no quid pro quo or anything. But
no.
So I'm not accusing them of any criminal wrongdoing. But, you know, so that's what they're doing. And, you know, it's killing us. So I thought Virgil Good had a, you know, interesting and good thing to say on that topic, which is like, you know, look, when unemployment's really high, just shut off the valves of all the immigration, right? Close down the illegal immigration. Let's let the economy absorb all these people who just graduated this year and are trying to get jobs. And then we can go employ the world, you know. Later,
why doesn't that just get a front row seat with everybody? What in the hell is wrong with people?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the politically correct environment in which we find ourselves, where somehow if you're going to stop immigration, you are either A, against immigrants or people who are not white, even though not everybody in America is white, so if you're protecting every American, you're clearly protecting pretty much the world because we have people from every race, tribe, and creed in our country who are legal Americans. I think the issue that people are failing to understand is not that we're saying we don't want any immigration. In fact, we'd be absolute morons if we did that because the fact is that talent out of 7 billion people is going to crop up all over the world, and we definitely want talented and hardworking people who believe in the principles of liberty to come to our country. But when you have 22% unemployment, you do not bring more people who need to work into your country.
And, you know, Rex, this is one of those great ironies of the left, you know. I mean, there's just thousands of them because they don't think about things. They just vote on things emotionally, and none of their stuff makes any internal logic whatsoever, which is why if you challenge them, they become very angry very fast and they start calling you names because they don't actually know anything. They just know a bunch of hot buttons, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're very happy to point out that, oh, the white population in America, you're fast becoming the minority in the country, ha ha ha, you know, and you won't be in charge anymore. Whatever. Like, I've never actually felt in charge of anything ever in this nation, period, you know? So, whatever's going on, don't blame me, okay? Because I'm not doing it, right? Because nobody listens to me. But if you're so happy that the white population is not the majority anymore, and you're talking about saving jobs for Americans, right, by limiting immigration, wouldn't, by definition, you be saving more jobs for non-whites because whites are no longer the majority, you know? But no, they don't. Oh, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, no, you didn't. Because
you're applying logic.
You're so caught up in the hate of this straw man that they've constructed in your mind that you don't actually think about what's going on, you know?
Well, Tex, you bring up a great point because, number one, it shows the incredible capacity for most people, including our elected idiots, to one stage thinking without any desire to look at stage two and beyond and look at the consequences of the actions, which any application of a minimum amount of rational thought would clearly indicate that, because we have 6,000 years of human history as a guiding block for what could possibly go wrong based on certain responses and actions. So, you know, they don't do that. And then number two, you mentioned the whole, you know, emotive thing. Well, when we think with our feelings, which is what cultural Marxism has us doing, thinking with your feelings, how often do you hear somebody ask you, well, how do you feel about that? I don't feel shit about it. Why don't you ask me what I think about it? And when I think, I'll give you a logical answer. But when you're thinking with your feelings, you're bound to make stupid decisions because the passions of man are unruly. And that's why God gave us a rational mind to guide our passions. But when you're thinking with your feelings, you're bound to make decisions based on emotion. And then the duopoly feeds you these notes of division and this zero-sum pie. If you got something, you got to take it from somebody else. If somebody else got something, they took it from you. If whites are doing well, it's because they've put blacks down. If blacks are doing well, it's because they've put whites down. And all this kind of stuff is designed to keep us fighting amongst ourselves as the oligarchy takes control of everything else because we're too busy at each other's throats. And
well,
the whole idea, and
actually,
I think... Go ahead.
You know, this is divide and conquer. And, you know, mm-hmm. It's a time-honored and often, unfortunately, successful strategy. I mean, you remember in Rwanda, the tragedy that was happening there back in the late 1990s, right? Well, they had the Tutsis and the Hutus, right? Well, those didn't exist. They were made up. The British came in, and they needed to govern the area that was Rwanda because they're trying to build a railroad from Cairo, from Cape to Cairo, all the way down to South Africa because they own South Africa and they own Cairo, and they want to be able to ship goods that way and not be interfered with by, you know, shipping and people attacking their ships at sea and all this kind of stuff. So Cape to Cairo was the thing. Cecil Rhodes was the man. The Rothschilds were the bankers, and they're going to go build the thing, okay? And then to get down there, you got to go through a place called Rwanda, right? Well, how are you going to govern Rwanda? Well, what they did is they just picked out all the tall people, and they declared them to be Hutus, I think. I may have that opposite, but they just declared, okay, all the tall people are the Hutus and all the short people, you're the Tutsis, right? And so the Hutus, they now run the place, and so basically it's like they got tall versus short going. But they treated them completely different, right? And so the people learned that they were different, you know, and therefore because I'm this height and that person's that height, I'm a different person, even though this was a never recognized distinction among the people. And you know what? They were so successful at this divide-and-conquer strategy that some 150 years later, they're actually hacking each other up over this crap.
Yep.
Believe it.
And that's the same thing. Yeah, Texas is a great analogy because it's exactly what they do to us here. And I think what we saw tonight, which I thought was very exciting, not only we actually see a real debate where the candidates disagreed on some things, and on other things were actually across party lines and across political spectrum and ideology in agreement. For example, the 1023 and 1021 sections of the 2011 NDAA. But what I thought was exciting was that here you have fairly divergent, at least if you kind of separate Johnson and Good on one side and Anderson and Stein on the other, although I think there's a pretty wide gap between Johnson and Good as well, pretty divergent views, all saying that it is about a plurality of voices being heard. It is about people being responsible for government as opposed to abdicating that authority to a few, you know, philosopher kings to rule our lives. I thought that was fantastic, and that's exactly the kind of thing that those of us who are aware of the control of the oligarchy through this false choice in a duopoly have to be aware of, that we have to make common cause and form coalitions with people that we might be uncomfortable dealing with. For example, if you're a pro-life Christian, that does not mean that you cannot get along with a pot-smoking person who's kind of pro-choice, because the issue is liberty. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that you're advocating their issues, okay? But it does mean that you're saying, you know what, we have a constitution, we have a proper discourse, we have proper procedures, we have dual sovereignties, and this is how we're supposed to work things out, as opposed to being so opposed to each other that we're willing to let two candidates who are almost identical pretend to woo our vote because we're so against each other, when the result is going to be exactly the same crap that we've been getting. And I think that's where the key is.
And, you know, if you saw the debate tonight, right, where they're actually talking about, you know, different things. They're disagreeing with each other. There's actually contrast, right? And then you watch whatever last night was, you know, they're not, it's just posturing. Because the thing is, the way the main debate works is they've already figured out that people like, people who are, you know, hardcore Republicans have already made up their mind. People who are hardcore Democrats have already made up their mind. I always vote Democrat all the time. And when they go watch the debate, yeah, that's what my guy said. Yeah, he's awesome.
Right.
You know, and when the Republicans, they see the same thing with Steve Romney, like, yeah, that's what a Republican would say, you know. So what they're going after is the people in the middle. And so they're finding these niggling differences to say, well, I actually agree with you. I'm like, wow, that guy, he seems pretty reasonable. You know, he seemed like a reasonable guy because I'm an idiot with, you know, mush in my head and I don't understand anything about politics. So that's what they're trying to do at this point. You know, they've already got you locked up in your cages, right? And so you're not a factor anymore because what are you going to do? You got no other place to go. What are you going to do? Go vote third party? You know, no way. So they're going after all the brain. They're going after the brain dead vote, right? That's what they're doing. And so when you go watch the debate, that's why it seems pretty freaking brain dead. And all you're doing is projecting, well, I really want this guy to win because I'm on this side, right? So I want that guy to win. But if you actually listen to what they're saying, do you actually agree with any of that stuff? Of course, it's so vague, it's hard to know. It's just a bunch of pablum, right? Oh, yeah, God, country, mom, apple pie. You know, I want us to be the greatest country in the world. Well, I want us to be even greater than you want us to be great. Oh, well, I think
I'm going to create 12 million jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm going to create 13 million jobs. Oh, cool. I want the guy who's going to give us 13 million jobs.
I could do 100 push-ups. How many can you do? I can do 101. Oh, burn. You know, like, I mean, that's not a debate, you know. But yet you guys are eating the stuff up with a spoon, you know.
It's
and
mental,
then you want to
mental masturbation.
Yeah, why is the country going to hell in a handbasket? Well, because you're falling for this crap, because you're buying into the fact that you're stuck in a trap and you can't get out. You know, I got to vote for one of these two groups. Okay, yeah, well, the two groups, they got together and they figured that out, and now they just work together. They have the same, completely the same foreign policy, 100%, because same guys are going to come in. You know, I'll just give you an example, okay? I mentioned this before, but trying to drive this home because this is a small piece, a small example is part of a bigger picture. Okay, Obama comes in and says, I'm going to shut down Guantanamo. First thing I'm going to do, you know, when I get in there. And they're like, hey, yeah, let's shut down Guantanamo. It's like, well, no, you know, maybe you don't want to do that because it's got all these problems. Oh, that sounds like a problem. Yeah, well, it's a big problem. So what should I do? Well, you should appoint like a blue panel commission or something, or you should get a bunch of people and like our smartest guys, and they should tell us where's the best place to put them. It's like, oh, yeah, well, that's what I'll do. That's a good decision for a president. That's what I'll do. I'll get some smart people to tell me where's the best place to put them. Well, the smart people who told them where the best place to put them are the exact same people because they work for the government and they're bureaucrats and, you know, they hang around for 30 years before they can retire and they get the question back like, what? We already did this one, right? It's Guantanamo. It's called Guantanamo. They're like, okay, well, you know, we got to go through the motions on this, so we're going to sit down. I mean, as a bureaucrat, if you're actually working there, you actually have to go do this and act like you're having a new decision-making process, right? So you interject things like, well, has the bad publicity around Guantanamo made it so bad that we should move Guantanamo to another location, another resort island somewhere else? And then someone says, well, wouldn't they just demonize the new resort island? And wouldn't that create a whole news spike in news stories about the new resort island that we're putting our terrorist internees on? And hasn't the Guantanamo narrative basically played itself out and to the extent that it's become boring? And so, hey, why don't we just leave them there? And then it comes back to Obama. Hey, I say we just leave them in Guantanamo. He's like, oh, okay. And that's the policy because it's all made by the same people. Anyway, sorry, slight digression.
Not really. I mean, I think it was a valid point, but the interesting thing is that you're absolutely right, that there's no contrast between the other two. It's just mental masturbation designed to give you this folly. And here we had, you know, real choice. And I think that that's what people have to realize, is that there are certain things that we are never going to agree on. You know, pro-life and pro-choice are just not reconcilable differences. But that debate needs to be had because currently we have that problem in this country. But the idea is that you're not going to have any of these debates legitimately when the long march through the institutions that has brought us to statism and quickly on our way to tyranny isn't stemmed. And that's really what this comes down to. And the false choice is that, hey, as long as my guy has total power, it'll be okay. Well, that's just stupid, because no one should have total power. Not your guy, not his guy, not her guy, nobody's guy. That's the problem. So when you start with, like, we need fiscal responsibility, well, we're going to have to cut Social Security. Oh, you can't cut my Social Security. We need fiscal responsibility. You can't cut food stamps. Guess what? It's going to hurt everybody. And the thing is that if you don't let it hurt soon by getting somebody in there who's going to actually fix it, it's going to hurt a shitload more later, because we're all going to be completely screwed up. And we're getting very close to that end. I noticed that Virgil Gu tonight was actually quite clear about this. He was very clear about this. He said, I thought this was the best quote of the evening. He said, you might not get what you want to hear from me, but you'll get straight talk. And his issues, which I found fascinating when he listed them both at the beginning and at the end, which I thought was a very good move to kind of bookend the entire conversation, he said, number one, balanced budgets now, not in 10 years, now. And he's absolutely right, because if we don't stop the spending and we don't stop that addiction to the free money that the Fed is printing, we ain't going to make it. So all of the other issues you want to discuss become absolutely irrelevant, because they will all come to an end all at once. I thought that that was great. We already talked about his Jobs for Americans First, which I thought was really good. And then, of course, everything else, they were all kind of in different areas on it, but they were talking about getting the money out, the super PACs out, and kind of putting the power back in the hands of the people, which I thought was pretty good. Did you guys catch some of that, and what were your thoughts
on that? Well, the only thing on the election issues, which I found very refreshing from Goode, was the fact that, you know, the other two people wanted, you know, the socialists wanted, you know, federal reform, federal dollars, federal laws. And I watched the pre-debate discussion at the roundtable before the debate and during the debate. And Virgil Goode is like, when we interviewed him that time, Rex, you remember that? He said, no, the federal government, we don't want the federal government making more laws and interfering. This is a state's right. We need to solve this problem in other ways. And I find that so refreshing every time I hear these constitutional party people.
And I must say, if I could chime in for a second, it did seem that out of the four candidates, three of them,
Robert, I believe, who has otherwise been unintroduced at this point.
Who are you and why are you here?
Who am I? I'm me. No, I'm Robert, and I'm here to talk about tonight's third-party debate.
All right, folks. Robert Jetter from Bard's Logic Political Talk, broadcasting Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, thank you. Yeah, as I said, out of the four candidates, it did seem to me, at least, that only Virgil Goode, at least for the most part, but pretty much all of it, was the only of the four candidates who was recognizing that we have a financial problem here. We have a fiscal problem here. The other three seem to want to find ways to, you know, spend money instead of trying to find a way of cut spending. I mean, and I would even include Gary Johnson in there in some ways. So at least that's the impression that I got. What about you folks?
Tex?
Well, I certainly got the feeling that your Jill Steins and your Rocky Andersons were about, hey, you know, the government's not being responsive to the people. I'll be responsive to you by giving you different types of free stuff, right? And so they, as far as I was concerned, they're completely lost in La La Land. You know, I mean, they just absolutely out of touch with reality, as far as I'm concerned. And then you had Virgil Goode, and you had Gary Johnson, and they were talking, you know, conservative talk, you know, more things about individual liberty, more things about limiting spending, and that sort of thing. Now, Gary Johnson did have his occasional waiver where he's talking about the lottery system and student loans and things like that that seemed a little off, but for the most part,
right, on.
And then if you look at Gary Johnson's record when he was governor, you know, he vetoed like 700 bills or something, which is more than all the other governors combined, I think. So, you know, if you're looking for someone who's going to be a deficit hawk and actually follow through, you know, he's a good person as well. So, you know, again, this goes back to why I think everybody should go, and they should go to freeandequal.org, click on the live debate stream underneath the blue bar, and go vote for Gary Johnson and Virgil Goode. But I would put Virgil Goode first because Gary Johnson is going to have a lot of Ron Paul people going in. I mean, basically, Gary Johnson is going to go to the second round automatically as a result of these Ron Paul people. So if you want to see two conservatives talking about conservative, two conservative come libertarians, talk about conservative principles in an intelligent way, I would urge you to put Virgil Goode number one on that because, you know, otherwise you're going to get drowned out. And I would hate to see Gary Johnson talking with Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson because those two people, quite frankly, I think don't know what they're talking about.
Well, based on
debate of ideas.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, so I was reading the comments at the bottom after I voted, and, you know, there's obviously a lot of liberals that have hit it pretty hard. So you've got Johnson. Oh, I want to hear Johnson and Stein. I want to hear Johnson and Rocky. And oh, Goode sounds like a Republican. So if you want Goode on that stage, you better get on it.
Yeah. I mean, because you got liberals who are voting in this thing, too. Because, look, there's a mass movement. We're in the midst of an election that nobody wanted to have, okay? So in 2004, I really thought that was the election no one wanted to have. This is like, you know, John Kerry, which the Democrats didn't want. You know, back then, Howard Dean was sort of their Ron Paul, if you will, although, you know, nowhere near as good. But he was kind of the person who spoke to what the average Democrat was thinking at the time, and the party establishment came in, and they shit-canned Howard Dean because he said, we're going to go into Iowa. Yeah! And they're like, look, he's insane. The guy just trying to buck up the crowd, and he's a maniac, you know. Anyway, but they keep playing that scream over and over. Do you think that's unbecoming of a presidential candidate? And they get all their media friends to drive that into the ground until it's the end of them because the media told everybody you can't vote for Howard Dean anymore, right, because he's unhinged. You have to vote for John Kerry. So you ended up with this election between John Kerry and George Bush. And as I was saying to people in Washington at the time, I'm like, look, we got 300 million people in this country. Are these really our best? These are our two best guys. This is what we got. You know, John Kerry, some retread from the 70s, and, you know, George Bush, who, you know, God bless him, but can't string a coherent sentence together to save his life. You know, but this time, now we really have the election that nobody wanted to have. Nobody wants to see an election between Obama and Romney. Nobody.
Right.
And everyone is dissatisfied. The Democrats are completely disillusioned with Obama because he came in as basically he's running as a semi-messianic figure. That's how he's going to deliver the nation from all his trials and tribulations. And then he came in and he's like, you know, I'm going to get out of Iraq. I'm going to change Guantanamo. I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to talk with the Iranians, and they're going to see the purity of my heart. And the Iranians are going to say, you know, before I hated you, but when you came and you spoke with honesty and you held my hand and you looked me in the eye, I realized that America, you truly do love me. And now I will put down my, you know, none of that shit happened, okay? So they're disillusioned. And they don't like Obama. And let's face it, Romney sucks, and we hate the guy, and wish to God that the party leadership had never colluded to put this asshole in the nominee seat, despite our best efforts in order to stop him. And now the entire nation can't stand either of the two parties. But some people, particularly the older generation, the subservient generation, the baby boomers who don't know what the hell to do, you know, they're supposed to be these big radicals and all this kind of crap, you know, but yet, well, we got to vote for one or the other two because, well, what else are you going to do? And then you got to think for yourself, and that's not on TV. They all grew up on fucking TV. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, now those dudes are going to go put one of these douchebags in office. Meanwhile, the rest of the country, which is Gen X and below, you know, that's not to say if you're older generation, you're, you know, still awake, thank God for you, but you know, this thing's a disaster. you know, and the whole nation is looking for, okay, what are we going to replace this shit with? Because this isn't working, okay? Because I don't know about you guys. I grew up, I was in Gen X. My whole life experience, you know, I grew up in the 70s. That's when I was a kid, I was running around in bell bottoms, those shitty pants you guys made us wear because, you know, the baby boomers thought they were cool. They sucked. They looked like crap, by the way. Just like as to, you know, bottom wear in the 70s was to looking, you know, to being a terrible choice, so are your two current candidates. Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are the bell bottoms of politics that you guys are foisting upon us. But our future has always been dim since I've been growing up, right? That's all I ever heard. There's going to be no Social Security. You know, the whole country's going to collapse. Everything's falling apart. It's total shit. You know, your future's never going to be as bright as mine. Everything's fucking terrible. You know, well, why don't we balance the budget? Oh, you can't do that because then you're cutting Social Security for old people. Okay, you know what? But there's no solutions with these guys, okay? Mm-hmm. But at this point, you know, behind me is Gen Y. They don't even know what to call themselves, you know? You can even give them an identity. At least we're like Gen X. It sounds kind of cool, like you're an X-Man or something, like Professor Xavier. They're like Gen Y. You're like Gen, the dudes who came later. Fuck you. Nobody's even thinking about you. We're the baby boomers. We're the most awesomest generation. Screw you guys, okay? And so Gen X and Gen Y, a little pissed off. And you know what? We're not playing your games anymore.
Cogent analysis text. Cogent analysis, and I would also argue that it's probably fairly accurate, although I know a lot of people in various age groups who are awake, but I think that we also have to be wary of not allowing generational differences to divide us, because this is really not about that, although I agree with you that it is 100% put in that camp. So when we start talking about budget cuts and Social Security might be getting cut, hate to tell you older folks, but some of you are going to have to suck it up. Now, of course, if someone is completely on subsistence with it, we do have kind of a social responsibility for the stupidity of putting in a Ponzi scheme and, you know, from the government to take from one group to give to the other, and you're going to have to unravel it in some way. And these are the long-term problems we have to address. But immediately, you've got to just balance the budget. That's what Virgil Goode said, and I think he's right on. All right, we're at the top of the hour, Tex, and we've got some people on the line, so I'm going to bring them in one at a time, see what's on their mind, and you know, give them a few minutes. We got quite a few of them, and we're only going to go through the next 30 minutes, and then we're going to close out the show. But you got anything on your mind before I open up the mics?
Yeah, I just want to close out that thought, you know, which was sort of a free-flowing, you know, series of ideas. What I want to say about the generational thing is that, you know, the baby boomers, when they were growing up, and the point I'm trying to communicate is that they were growing up in America that was doing very well, right? And it was doing very well under the two political parties, right? Even though they were out there fighting against the Vietnam War, you know, and that sort of thing, overall the country was doing okay, right? So they are overall, you know, everything's basically fine. Well, the next generation, when it was growing up, you know, we had gas lines and all this kind of stuff and OPEC and, you know, the communists are invading God only knows what, big communist expansion throughout the world at the time. You know, they're in Central America, they're invading Afghanistan, all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, I was never, my generation didn't inherit the America's okay, let's just all stick together and everything's going to be okay. We inherited the it's all falling apart, you better save yourself because the rest of us are all doomed, you know. And Generation Y, I mean, which, you know, I talk to people in that generation, they just don't believe in anything. They're just like, this whole thing is complete crap. And this whole system has fallen apart. You know, there is America, as we were told, doesn't exist. So what I'm trying to say is with the third-party movement, it's generational, right? And so that's why I think there's actually a major political shift happening in the country, because the two-party system just isn't cutting it. Or at least the people who are currently leading the two-party system, they're yesterday's news. Because I don't know what the hell that debate was about yesterday, but it wasn't about anything I want to hear about. Did they talk about Europe going off the cliff? Are we going
to... Nope, that would address the Federal Reserve tax. Can't have that.
Exactly. Did they talk about the rise of Asia and how American companies are making that happen by investing overseas because wages are cheap, but how we tax American companies when they bring that money back here? So normally if you're running, you know, if you're going to run an empire, okay, I'm not saying you should get into the empire business, okay, and we were set up not to get in the empire business. All I'm saying is Empire 101, when you send your guys overseas, what you want them to do is come back with plunder, right? Which I don't want to call plunder in today's terminology, but money, loot, something. They need to have something to show for it. What you don't want is to send your people over there to enrich themselves in that nation at the expense of your own nation, because you're supporting it, right? So what's happening is they go over there, they make money, and they get taxed in that country, right? Income tax or whatever kind of tax they're paying, mostly income tax, right? But if they bring that money back from overseas after being taxed overseas into the U.S., they get taxed again. And guess what? They get taxed the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Do you know what they don't do? They don't bring that money back, so they reinvest it back into that country, not into our country. And we wonder, hey, why are things not going good here? You know what we need to do? We need to raise corporate taxes. No. You're an idiot. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do that at all. Anyway.
Yep, so. Agreed. I agreed, Rex, Tex, whatever your name is, whoever the hell you are, my co-host. All right. Trog and Robert, if you got anything to say real quick, go for it before I bring on callers one at a time for the next 30 minutes.
Bring them on. I'm good.
All right. Robert, anything on your mind?
Well, I've got a lot in my mind, but I've got a lot in my mind, but of course, you know,
anything on
a
topic.
Lot of other folks in. Well, yes, of course it's on. Of course it's on topic. But as you said, you got a lot of people on the line, so I would like to leave the floor for those folks. Thank you for the opportunity, though.
All right, I'm going to bring in callers now one at a time for the next 20 minutes, and then we're going to go back to closing out the show. First caller is from area code 904. 904, you're live. If you don't want to be, just let me know. I'll remute you. You can keep listening.
Hey,
but,
Rex.
Oh, hey, it's Sammy. Hey, how are you? I didn't recognize the number, Sammy. How are you?
Hey,
Sammy, good to see you, buddy.
We're doing good. We are not going to shut up, and I was just going to read to you tonight on the ballot here in Florida, which is awesome. I got a sample ballot today. Virgil Goot is number 4 on the ballot.
No, that's good.
And
excellent.
And I mean, Tom Heflin is actually on the ballot, but he has you got to poke his name as a write-in.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. We got Mitt Romney, Mitt Obamney, Barack Obamney. Tommy.
Well, Sammy, did you watch the debate tonight?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Well, what did you take away from that?
Oh, I think Virgil Goot kicked ass when it came to conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. Here, let me get a little bit better light here. All right.
Anything particular that Virgil Goot said in the debate that you found, you know, either new, something you hadn't heard before, something that made him stand out over the others?
Nah. He sounds so much like Newt.
Well, at least in many ways he is, but in some ways I would say he's considerably different.
He's a little bit more libertarian in some views, but he is the only candidate that we can support 100%.
Well, I mean, perhaps that's true for Newt Gingrich supporters, but I would argue that there are other options in other states. For example, Ron Paul is actually eligible on some ballots in some states, so some people might be inclined to go that route. And, of course, I think Gary Johnson gave a fair showing today. I mean, I got some significant issues with some of the things he said, especially federalizing certain redefinitions of marriage. But overall, I think that he, at least he was a constitutionalist, which is why what Tex was talking about earlier I thought was really important, that people need to go to freeandequal.org and vote for Goode and Johnson so that they can both be in the debate next week, because I think the contrast between the mental masturbation that we saw last night between Obama and Romney to a real debate between Johnson and Goode next week would be fantastic. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. I mean, they're the only real two independent candidates that could win it. And, I mean, the Green Party, the little witch, stands no chance. And I hate to use the word little witch. The other people are irrelevant.
Except, Sammy, I will say something. I mean, Dr. Stein is not irrelevant. I mean, I'm not a socialist, so I really don't agree with anything she said, but I think that she's certainly a factor because I think she can be a significant force in pulling votes away from Obama.
Okay, agreed, and maybe from Mitt Romney. Right now, we have 11 candidates on our ballot down here, and if you want to do a write-in, say, for Thomas Heffling, all you got to do is punch a button, and he will be an automatic write-in.
Interesting. Well, you know, and one of the things at the sort of conclusion of the debate, there were a few strange moments in there because you really did have contrasting ideologies on the stage, whereas, you know, with Obama and Romney, they are in vast agreement because Obama is implementing Romney's policies from the state level. He's implementing them at the national level, and they're trying to argue about how they differ on that, among other things, when they totally agree on foreign policy. And I did, by the way, go double-check that transcript, and Romney did say that that Iran needs Syria as their halfway to the sea. Check that transcript. So, yeah, he actually did say that, you know. And,
but Gary Johnson is not worthy to be on the podium.
Well, I don't know about that. He's a governor, a two-term governor of New Mexico, so I don't know that if I could say he's not worthy of being there.
Well, I'm not worthy of being there. But Gary Johnson, I mean, he is a liberal, and he might say he's libertarian, but he is liberal. And it's time for him wear his badge.
Well, I don't know that he's a liberal. I mean, he definitely has some libertarian views. I mean, but if you look at his record as governor of New Mexico, he enacted a lot of conservative things. You know, he vetoed a lot of bills and spending bills and that sort of thing, and therefore he's for limiting government. And so I think those things are good. But if you look at when they were asked what, you know, if they could implement one constitutional amendment, what would it be?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
both Virgil Goode and Gary Johnson said that they would do term limits.
Yes.
What I thought was sort of strange was Rocky Anderson said that he would make a constitutional amendment about sexual orientation and gender identification. You know,
as if that's like an important issue, given everything
crazy.
Else we got going on.
The nation's
now
going
we're
off
trying
the cliff.
To favor
we got
our
bases
country.
All over the world. You know, Europe's going under. Asia's rising. You know, Russia. You know, they're perennially planning, scheming something to screw us over by stopping the dollar, or doing something with the oil market, or something to screw us over. And in the meantime, the one constitutional amendment that this guy would enact is. Well, I'd let transgender people, I'd make that a constitutional amendment. You know, like, this guy is so clueless. So, you know, if you're talking about liberal, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, there certainly were a lot of liberals on the stage tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I did not see that so much in Gary Johnson.
And Tech, well, actually, I mean, he did have that, he did in some sense agree with Anderson on that particular issue, but he didn't call for a constitutional amendment. But I'll give Anderson credit for this, even though, A, I don't think that that would require a constitutional amendment even if you wanted to actually do it, and two, it's certainly something that shouldn't be done, but he certainly had a more cogent response than Dr. Stein. I don't even know what she actually proposed as an amendment. Did you get that at all?
No, and actually, as I mentioned that, I looked at my notes, and I don't know what she said. I assume her amendment would be Green New Jobs. That's a new
No, no, no. It was something about getting the corporations out of something, and it was incoherent.
Her constitutional amendment would be that corporations are not people, and getting the corporations out of politics and whatever. So basically what she's saying is she would go rewrite or overturn the 14th Amendment. I don't know how popular that's going to be with liberals, because that 14th Amendment was one of the Civil War amendments, right? You know, had to do with slavery, and that also is the one that they used to say that corporations are also people. So if you go start tinkering with the 14th Amendment, I think you're going to end up with a really big problem. But fortunately for her, most liberals don't know anything about the government or how it works or what the Constitution is or amendments. And so they probably don't realize that she just said, hey, let's go rewrite the 14th Amendment anyway.
Well, I mean, the text, it's not
free
necessarily
pot. Free pot.
It's not, yeah, it's not necessarily an amendment that I think is untouchable, but I didn't get anything coherent from her. And I think what she was going for was basically the same thing that Virgil Goode proposed, and when he proposed term limits, and not only did he propose it, but he said how he would do it, and he even gave a concession to the current congressional critters, because otherwise it would be impossible to get it through that way. And I think that he had a very practical program of giving them, you know, say 12 years for those that are already in office, and then term limits thereafter, which I think that the intent there and is that that would eliminate the corporatist influence on our government, because those guys would basically be temporary citizen legislators, as they're supposed to be, which I thought was a pretty important thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, Sammy, I would argue that Johnson himself has clearly said that he is more conservative than Mitt Romney, which is not very difficult to do. And I think what he's referring to there is that fiscally and economically he's significantly more conservative than Romney. But he also said that he's more liberal than Obama. And I think what he's referring to there is not only civil liberties, drones, NDAA, and all that stuff, but also, you know, social issues, which for social conservatives is obviously unpalpable. But nevertheless, it would certainly be preferable to what we have with the Obama twins. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, agreed. But here, folks, I'm going to drop off now. And God bless you all. And
Sammy, you mentioned that you might be doing a show later this week. Have you decided when you might be doing that?
I will be doing it tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, what time?
At 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. All right, folks. That's the great Sam Samford, Constitutional Conservatives Unite. You can find him on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live tomorrow, Wednesday, October 23rd, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for calling in, Sammy.
You're very welcome, and I just want to let my Facebook friends know I reactivated all my pages, and we are not going to shut up. We're not going back down. I might deactivate them after the show tomorrow night, but we have to get the word out there.
Well, Sammy, thank you for doing what you do. We know that you're facing some you know, personal health difficulties, and that you're still not shutting up and getting out there. And I think that that's a testimony to your patriotism, and we appreciate it.
Well, and Rex, you're awesome. Dan, you are awesome. Robert, you are awesome. Randy is awesome. I think Randy is going to try to have the vice presidential candidate on my show tomorrow night. And
great.
That will be awesome.
It's good to hear, Sammy.
Excellent. That would be good.
Yeah. And I stand for the Constitution.
That would be good.
Very good evening. God bless you all.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sammy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Sammy. All right, folks. We've got a few more minutes where we're going to have a few more callers. Next one that's been on hold the longest is area code 941. If you just want to listen to the show, tell me. I'll remute you. But 941, you are live with Tex and Rex. What did you think of the debate?
I watched it, and the only one that I saw that really stood for this country was Virgil Goode. And I am an absentee voter because I'm disabled, and I have already voted for him.
Excellent.
And I wanted to correct something that Sammy said. Tom Hoefling is on the Florida ballot. He is the very last one listed right above the write-in space, but he actually is on the ballot, and that was surprising to me. But what I wanted to talk about, when they were talking about with budget issues and stuff, and they all got on this, we have to fund college education, higher education, and literally burying people up to their eyeballs in debt. And, my father, he only ever had 2 years of college because that's all the money there was. But yet my father made his career. He went and he furthered his education sometimes on his own at the libraries. My father became highly specialized to where he was one of only 50 worldwide that had an understanding of telecommunications, in the way that he did. My father was a contract consultant for NASA for 25 years on a 2-year college education. What people nowadays are getting lazy. Oh, we want to go to college so we can say, hey, see, we got a college degree. But most of them come out of college, I think, stupider than when they went in. You try to talk to them, and you hear whatever communist liberal professor poured in them instead of actually thinking for themselves. So I see this government doing more harm than good for our future generations by, making all this money available for them to go to college and be dumbing down. My father, he was part of the space program, and he had a 2-year college education. He never even got the chance to graduate. And I'm thinking, people, when did you stop trying to be self-sufficient? Think for yourself.
Well,
make your own path.
Everyone has bought into this idea that, sort of what would be called blue-collar jobs or manual labor, that's bad and you don't want to have to do that kind of stuff. And so you got to go to college to get a good job so that you can have a white-collar job and you can be, like, in management, you can do all this other kind of stuff. Well, the problem is we crank those people out by the dozens, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, not everybody can be in management because someone's got to be doing the work. And this gets back to a basic economic principle, which is true of all nations. You can't eat an omelet made of theoretical eggs. If somebody didn't grow the eggs, and if those eggs are not present, it doesn't matter what your theory on egg production is because they have to be made. And so we've reached the point where a college education is starting to price itself out of the market as a result of government policy. And so, look, I'm in the oil and gas business, right? Okay, so let me tell you something. The oil and gas industry down here in Texas, they got a bajillion jobs, okay? They got people that they need to put in jobs. They have people that they need to do very basic things, people who can drive trucks. If you drill a well, you got to bring a lot of water to and from that thing. You've got to bring, pipe. I mean, my God, I can't tell you how many truckloads of pipe are driving down the freeways when I drive between here and Austin. They need people who can drive trucks. They need people who are going to work the rig and be tool pushers and that kind of stuff to drill the thing. And they pay for a high school graduate, this is no other education, right? But for a high school graduate, the average salary of somebody in the oil industry who has only a high school education is $95,000 a year, right? I mean, that's pretty high freaking paying, okay? And you didn't go to college for that. But you got people paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to college to get a degree in something, and when they come out, they get a job that pays $35,000, right? The guy who just goes and is like, hey, you need someone to drive the truck, you need someone to go work on the rig, guy's dragging down six figures. Actually, when I worked for the Department of Energy, I went out, I was actually in the tundra of Russia, of all places, because ConocoPhillips had a site out there that we happened to be visiting. And, you know, while the important people were talking about God only knows what, wandering around, you know, showing them this, that, or the other, I just struck up a conversation with one of the guys who was working there, and he happened to live in Marble Falls, Texas, right, which is right next to Austin where I grew up. And so I started talking to him, like, Marble Falls? I'm like, oh, what are you doing out here? And he said, I do 6 months on, 6 months off. I'm like, so you live 6 months in Marble Falls, and then you're up here in God only knows where? I mean, Hoth, essentially, like Empire Strikes Back, Hoth or something? He's like, yeah. And so he told me what kind of money he's making. I mean, he's making, you know, $150,000 a year. 6 months out of the year, he's completely off. And you can't spend money where he's at. I mean, literally, he's in the tundra. I mean, there's no town, there's no nothing. So he might as well be on a submarine during that time. That's not a college education level job that you have to have, but everyone's buying into this thing, and as a result, you're going into this, it's like a mousetrap. And then you come out, and okay, now you have this nice white-collar job, but it doesn't pay that much because everyone has that same job, and now you're drowning in debt.
All right,
because down here in Florida, they actually have a college for, you know, even to get now a job mowing lawns. They're wanting people that have hot college educations. So now they've got a college down here for taking college courses in ditch digging, mowing lawns, washing dishes. It's asinine.
You're absolutely right, and those are all valid points, and I'm glad that we actually had a discussion about that. I am now going to go ahead and bring in an Illinois area code. I believe that we have someone from Illinois who may have attended the debate tonight. 618, you're live. Who are you, and what's on your mind?
Live and in your face, guys. You better.
Hey, how's it going, Randy?
Sounds like Randy.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, but I got to tell you, you know, while there's certainly some elements of liberty that they were a part of, you know, there was one issue that I felt like a very lonely island on, and that was when, and you may have caught that if watching the debate, is when Virgil said he would defund Planned Parenthood. And
yep.
You may have heard my voice going, yeah! And everybody else booed.
Yeah, they got some boos, yeah. Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
I think
that's why I made some comments to Chris that, you know, well, they may have somewhat of a liberal crowd there, at least when it comes to social issues.
Well, I got to tell you, honestly, you know, if I had been Virgil Goode, I think in either my opening or probably in my closing statement, I would have made. Look, I am the only pro-life candidate. I am the only pro-traditional marriage family candidate that you can vote on. I would have made, you know, I think he did great on, you know, providing himself as a wedge between all the others. I mean, you know, he said, look, if you don't like what I'm telling you, vote for the other three. I think that was pretty profound there. And so, you know, but I got to tell you, when I yelled, yeah, I think there was a whole lot of daggers coming my way.
I bet they were. Randy, which you're not, you're not unaccustomed to being such a mild-mannered man. But let me ask you this. What was the feel and the vibe actually in the hall? I mean, what kind of crowd was it, and how did they respond, and what did you have any interesting conversations with the people who were there? Did anyone change their mind?
I didn't hear anybody say they changed their mind per se, but I will tell you that I know for a fact that there were some people that were there that did not come to support Virgil, and my assumption was they were there to support Gary Johnson, but the guy said, Virgil was my favorite. He was in your face, honest. He's like, I'm not telling you what you want to hear. I'm telling you the way the things are. And so I think that generally was the feel from what I was hearing and getting the feel of. People seriously appreciated Virgil's position of this is what I'm telling you.
Randy, I mean, I'll tell you this. For, you know, from my perspective, watching Virgil Good up there, you know, look, third-party movements, they tend to be, you got a lot of libertarians, and you got a lot of liberals and stuff who, you know, kind of the remnants of the, what is the guy, the Green Party dude who did the thing with the Pinto, you know.
Ralph Nader.
Yeah, Ralph Nader. Yeah, don't know why I couldn't remember his name. But, you know, so you got a lot of those types. So it's essentially kind of a hostile audience or semi-hostile audience for someone speaking conservative. But the thing is, he comes out and he's like, look, this is what I believe. And you know what? I know you're not going to like this, but boom, there it is. Hey, what do you think about that? And the thing is, the American people are so tired of being lied to and having politicians that are trying to focus group everything and say it the nicest way possible that they don't trust it anymore. If they have a guy that's like, look, this is what I'm going to do. And you know what? You could accuse me of being whatever, you know, this. But I just don't think that if, you know, unemployment is above 5%, I just don't think we should be letting people come in here and take our jobs, right? So I don't know. Maybe that makes me a terrible person, but, you know, maybe that actually makes economic sense, you know? We can't, you know, love, feed, and tend to the needs of the entire world. Why don't we try to tend to our own needs and let the world tend to its own needs, and then we can all be better off, right? And so I think that that type of leadership and that type of leader, which is somebody who's willing to say unpopular things but be right about them, is what people actually want because they want to hear the truth. And this is one of the things that I liked about Newt Gingrich, which is he would say stuff like that. You know, he would stand up and he would say, this is what I believe. And then the media would come after him. And then he was able to defend his position and why he stood for it. And people are like, wow, that's what I like. That's what I want. I want somebody who can stand up, you know, to these media bullies and all these other people who are just out there, you know, slinging mud. So, you know, I don't know. I liked what I saw.
Yeah, the only thing I thought, you know, I wish Virgil would have done is in my opinion, he kind of let Gary Johnson get one over on him because Gary Johnson said, I'm the only candidate that is against the unconstitutional income tax. Well, guess what? Virgil is running for the Constitution Party, a party that was originally known as the U.S. Taxpayers, that their almost sole focus at the beginning was to destroy the 16th Amendment because of the unconstitutional nature of taxation. So, I really wish Virgil on that particular issue would have just put his foot on the neck of Gary Johnson and said, no, you're not the only candidate that wants to get rid of the unconstitutional income tax.
Yeah, actually, that's, you know, you raise a good point because when Gary Johnson said that, I was like, wow, you know, I really like that, you know. And I was unaware of what you just told me, so now we know that he's against the income tax as well.
Oh,
and,
huge,
you know, I
huge.
Have a bit more understanding of the history of your party.
Yeah,
okay,
they're
you know,
huge.
Here's the deal. I'm in a car where we've been running down the highway. My dad stepped out to gas the car up here, but I've got my mom and my oldest daughter with me, and my mom wants to say something. So I'm not sure what she's going to say. I'm giving a disclaimer. You know, it's my mom, so be gentle.
Are you sure you want to expose her to us? Just kidding, Randy.
Go ahead, Mom.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mary.
Yes, we can hear you.
Good. A couple of them ran over the a lot of time. But Virgil Good was short but sweet.
Okay, there you have it from my mom. Virgil Good was short but sweet.
Absolutely. Well, particularly in the answer that you were talking about, Rex, with respect to the NDAA, where he just said, I would have vetoed it.
Yep. I thought that was brilliant. And, Randy, I don't know what the crowd reacted to it, but for me, that was a very Gingrich-like moment And I thought it was very powerful because it was direct, and nothing else needs to be said. I mean, you know, there's a lot of argument with the fact that, you know, you do have to reauthorize military spending every 2 years because the Constitution prohibits you from having an army perpetually. And so the NDAA is the act that they used to do that. But then sticking in provisions 1021 and 1023, as important as the rest of it might be, would render it unconstitutional. And he didn't even get into all that. He just simply said, I would veto it. That was brilliant. That was fantastic. That's exactly what people want to hear.
Well, I don't think the audience, and I suspect that most people, they really, you know, because typically politicians, you know, are going to really convolute the issue and, you know, give you this and give you that, and by the next thing you know, you're not sure what they really said. And because people are so used to that, I really don't think the audience was ready for such a straight, direct and profound answer. And I think, you know, that's probably going to be true for almost anybody that watched it. They're like, I was waiting for more, but I didn't get more. So, you know, I think they really had to deal with that for a while, that, you know, that was the end, that was succinct, and that was enough.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things is with, you know, vast parts of the American people, you know, and I don't know how large it is, but you get tired of hearing politicians bowing down to these, you know, sort of sacred calves that we've created nowadays in politics. Oh, you can't say this, you can't talk about that, you can't say this. But when you have somebody that can stand up and say, look, I believe this, and I don't care, you know, what you're going to throw at me, this is why I believe it, and this is why I'm right, I think people are like, oh, my God, you know, here's someone who can stand up to all this, you know, BS that's being hurled in our society, somebody who really can speak their mind and not be ashamed of that. And people are attracted to that. That's called leadership. That's, you know, basically the definition of leadership.
And the interesting thing, certainly, you know, and this was an agreement of everybody that I talked to afterwards, Virgil separated himself from every other candidate on that platform. Nobody else separated themselves like Virgil separated himself. If you don't like what I'm telling you, vote for the other three. I mean, you know, I'm not so sure I would have had the, the gumption to say that because, you know, you're almost alienating people. And what was funny is a lot of people clapped. And I don't even think they really understood why they were clapping, whether they were clapping because he said vote for the other three or because he had the intestinal fortitude, may I say, balls to say that.
Well, I think that it's definitely the courage, which is what people are looking for in leadership. But I also think it was Da Vinci who said that simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. And I think that that's exactly what Virgil Goode was able to convey. And I think that Gary Johnson did an excellent job of defending some positions in which he is in agreement with Virgil Goode. And, you know, it seemed, and I don't know what the feel of the crowd there was, it might have been kind of a liberal crowd, but it seemed to me that Anderson and Stein, you know, were kind of all over the map with some of their assertions having kind of lost their way a little bit. It seems that their core is a little bit weak. I don't know. What was the gist of the crowd when Anderson and Stein were responding, Randy?
Well, there was certainly a significant number of supporters that they had there. What I really don't understand, to be quite honest, is why Rocky is even running against Jill. Because, quite frankly, almost everything that Rocky espoused is almost straight out of the Green Party platform. So, you know, I really don't get that. And, quite frankly, from, you know, watching the people the way they reacted and the way, you know, they associated with one another, I don't know that they think they understand there's a clear distinction there either. And,
that's why Jill Stein was working that Green New Deal thing so hard, because it's the only point of distinction. But I got the same thing. And actually, when I saw the first sort of series of this, when they had the second presidential debate, and then they had Virgil Goode, Rocky Anderson, and Jill Stein kind of interject their thoughts, my first thought was, why Rocky Anderson? Like, where did you find this guy? Like, I'd never even heard of this party. You know, it's sort of, they kind of pulled it out of thin air, I thought.
Well, Randy, if I'm not mistaken, Randy, real quick, if I'm not mistaken, it didn't free an equal
pretty much invite everybody who had enough ballot access to garner 270 electoral votes. Wasn't that the primary criteria?
Yes, yes, that was the criteria. Enough electors to be able to win the presidency.
Excellent.
Okay, I was unaware of that.
Yeah, that was their criteria, which is why, you know, one of the candidates that you guys have interviewed didn't get up there, and there was a couple others. Like, you know, in fact, interestingly, somehow I have no idea how it happened. I'm getting tweets from Roseanne Barr, and apparently one of her tweets says she's on, she's a write-in candidate on 18 states now due to some of the lawsuits that she's been doing. So, you know, she wasn't in there because, you know, she doesn't have enough electors as a write-in or otherwise to be there.
You know, one thing I think when I think of Roseanne Barr is presidential.
Yeah, very, very much so. And Randy, any additional details on the debate next week in Washington, D.C. that you might have?
Well, they concluded. Now, I don't know if you caught it on the live stuff or not, but Christina Tobin definitely said there is a debate in Washington, D.C. next Tuesday.
Excellent. So, well, you know, the important thing about that is,
let me also say before I forget it, because you mentioned his name earlier, apparently Ralph Nader is the big supporter of that to make it happen, because I know that Christina Tobin has a pretty close relationship with Ralph Nader on that. She was one of Nader's raiders in 2008.
Okay.
So he's a big sponsor of that particular debate and why it's going to happen.
Well, the message of liberty does make for strange bedfellows because the oligarchy is just really suppressing everything. Randy, do you have any information regarding Obama and Romney responding to their invitation to this debate? Did they just ignore it, or did they actually decline?
As far as I know, they just simply ignored it.
Okay. That's typical.
I do not believe there was a response at all, at least nothing from anything that anybody's ever said would ever indicate that to me whatsoever.
Okay. Yeah, that's typical. All right,
well,
we've got a couple more. Go ahead.
And it's absolutely typical. And what's, you know, I thought, you know, what was very telling, you know, and in fact, Virgil made the point that Stein and Anderson were exactly the same as Romney and Obama on one of those issues. I love that point.
Actually, yeah, that's very true, because when either one of them spoke, you just never knew what kind of crazy thing was going to come out of their mouth, but they basically were in total agreement.
Yeah, and Virgil said, you know, on this particular issue, you've actually got four people that agree on it, and that was pretty funny. And interestingly, you know, Christina Tobin made the point that the Green Party and the Justice Party were on the left, and that the Constitution and the Libertarians were on the right. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there was only one person who was actually on the right with everything, because, as we know, Gary Johnson is pretty left on social issues and some other things as well. So, you know, just to clarify, there was only one person who was actually on the right.
Well, yeah, and Randy, I think that if we're going with the notion of the false left paradigm that most people are familiar with,
yeah, exactly.
I would have to agree with you. You know, I think that from the perspective of oligarchy versus liberty, we would put both Johnson and Goode on the right. Now, obviously, you know, for us Christians and social conservatives, Gary Johnson has some significantly problematic positions. However, if we're comparing him versus the oligarchy twins, then his position on diffusion of power and bringing it down to the state level would make him a far more attractive candidate for social conservatives, because then we would be able to affect those changes on a local level, which is why I think it would be extremely exciting
to see Johnson and Goode debate without the distraction of Stein and Anderson. And to make that happen, I'm going to recommend to everybody again, please tell your friends on Twitter, on Facebook, in person, email them, and go there yourself. Go to freeandequal.org and make sure you vote for Goode and then Johnson to be in the debate next week so that we can really have a contrast with the terrible debate that we had last night.
Here are some of the things you do not want to hear if Rocky Anderson or Jill Stein gets that vote. Rocky Anderson said this. This is like sort of confusing things that they said that I wrote down. Rocky Anderson said that the United States has the worst rate of women dying in childbirth in the world. Oh, really? I don't think that's true. That's just fake. You just made that up. Maybe statistically it's true, but that's only because the United States actually keeps statistics on this, and they're not really, you know, worried too much about the statistic in Madagascar or, you know, in Bangladesh or, you know, they're not keeping this stat, okay? So, yeah, maybe statistically, look, in my job, I got to dig into World Bank statistics all the time. I got to dig into IEA statistics, but World Bank statistics, they kind of cover the gamut of stuff. And I recently had to download a massive spreadsheet that they have, right? And this thing's got everything on every single freaking country, right? You know, and so I was digging around looking for gasoline usage and, you know, diesel usage and some other stuff, right? Because that's the industry that I'm in. But they have everything, right? And so as you're going through every single country, you know, they have like 200 categories of data that they're keeping, you know, and you go through these countries, just huge blank spaces, just deserts of data, okay? Just no data. What the hell is going on in Afghanistan with child mortality? Nobody knows. Nobody, there's just no data, right? And so, you know, it's a BS statistic, right? So I don't need to hear, you know, next Tuesday a guy going out saying stupid stuff like that. And then Stein says that in Afghanistan, we are dropping bombs on weddings and funerals. Oh, really? Seems like a strange way to win a war to me. Hey, let's go bomb this wedding. No, never mind. Never mind where the enemy is. These people are getting married. Let's hit that thing with the B-52s. Let's get over there as soon as we can. You know, got to create some misery today. And then she said, you know, something about, you know, we got to get out of Afghanistan and no more war for oil. There's no oil in Afghanistan. That's kind of one of its problems. You know?
Yeah, but there's a whole lot of poppy fields.
Yeah.
Okay, you but know, she didn't say no war for drugs. She said no war for oil. It's sort of the same mistake that Romney made the other day when he said that Iran wants access to Syria's vast oceanfront property.
Yes, exactly. All 2 miles of it or whatever it is. You know?
Yeah, Iran apparently wants to go through, you know, thousands of miles of desert to get to 2.5 feet of Mediterranean shore when they have a massive coastline in the Persian Gulf. So it was kind
of the size of the coastline of California. Why can't we get a warm water port here in Iran? There's no warm water port. We got to get to Syria. We don't even share a border with them. Let's just start attacking stuff. Anyway.
One of the things that disturbed me, though, and I wish would have either Virgil or Gary Johnson have taken to capitalize on, how many times did you hear Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson use the term incorrectly, color democracy? I wanted to stand up and yell, it's a republic, you freaking idiots, but I kept my seat.
We did hear you.
Yeah. I was going to say, you might have missed this earlier because I raised this. When they were talking about the NDAA, right, and Virgil Goode gave his very lapidary, terse, perfect, you know, in the net, you know, nothing but net, you know, answer, she talked about NDAA, how she was against it because she said it's unallowable and against basically the principle of liberty, right? But the interesting thing is in her entire answer, and I think throughout the night, she did not mention the Constitution one single time. It's like she doesn't even acknowledge that the document exists, because as a dedicated socialist and or communist, they don't like the Constitution because it limits what the government can do, and so they just don't want to talk about it. It's verboten to mention.
Yep. You're absolutely right, Tex. That's a very valid point. Listen,
well,
we're in the last...
That's the one thing I wish... You're absolutely right, because, you know, the one thing I wish would have been made clear to everybody, they could have done this, because, you know, they didn't... And she did not say it violates the Constitution. She says it violates our civil rights. Well, guess
right.
what? It's a violation of the Constitution, specifically the Fifth Amendment that says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of the law. It's a complete violation of our Constitution.
Absolutely right. Listen, folks, we're in the last 10 minutes of the show. I've got a couple more callers I'd like to bring in. We'll probably go into recording time, but I do need the 2 minutes of airtime to say goodnight to our live listeners. But real quick, Randy, before I go into that and bring them in, I wanted to ask you how Larry King was received by the crowd there and what you thought of his job as moderator.
Well, I thought for the first time somebody actually tried to maintain some kind of control. You know, while I did go over just a second or two, I don't think Virgil Good ever went over even once. And so... And I appreciate before the thing went live, Larry King said, I believe we have a specific need to have voices heard, and this is a noble cause. And so, you know, I don't know if he's just pandering to, you know, the crowd or not, but I at least appreciate it, you know, because he said that off the air and not so much on the air. And so I felt that it was a little bit more meaningful. And so, you know, I certainly appreciated his moderation over the whole thing because there was an element of control, unlike that first two-party duopoly dance, not even a debate, but that dance they had was totally out of control. So, you know, I thought
yeah.
this was a very well-done debate from Christina and from Larry King, and I appreciated the fact that he was there. And
yeah.
he was well received by the audience because of that, I think.
Well, that's good to hear. And actually, that Lehrer was, he might not have, you know, he didn't even really need to be there. He could just open the debate and let the two of them run their lines. But to correct you, there was one point where Larry King did correct Virgil Good on time, and that was, I believe, in the closing statement. Or perhaps it was earlier, I'm not sure, but it was when Mr. Good was going over the 4 points that he believes are the most important: balanced budgets, immigration moratorium till employment is below 5%, term limits, and removing the super PAC money from the electoral process. And I think he ran over just slightly, and it was not a I thought that the exchange was fair because it seemed to me that Larry King was keeping the conversation going without playing favorites or without trying to disparage anybody, unlike some of the other moderators do, and I thought that was
right.
really cool.
Right, and I agree. The problem for us is that the audience was clapping when, and the only reason I could tell Larry was trying to keep control was I saw that finger go up, and but I couldn't hear what he was saying at that point in time because the audience participation overwhelmed what he was trying to say, so that's the only reason I really didn't realize he was admonishing Virgil on that, so... I can see.
And Randy, actually, I think that's actually a great point you just brought up, the audience participation, where in the duopoly debates, there is no commentary from the audience. It's as if, hey, you
now
voters
a,
don't matter. You're not in this process.
That's a Romney that's, order, because Romney was infuriated, literally infuriated, when Gingrich was being applauded in the South Carolina debates. And he, if you watch that debate, and if you see as soon as they close out, Romney runs off freaking stage and starts yelling at someone, right, about the applause. Because, hey, Newt's getting applause. I'm not getting applause. We can't have applause in the future. No one's allowed to applaud or say who they like because they have to like me. And I hate Mitt Romney. I'm just going to say I hate Mitt Romney. I hate the idea of Mitt Romney. It's like I hate Mitt Romney more than I hate the idea of Fabio. Like there's a guy named Fabio who exists who runs around and does stuff. It's like, you know, I don't know. Somebody, there's a comedian who has a whole thing about Fabio, which is hilarious. But I can't stand Mitt Romney, you know. And I don't know if you heard this last night, Randy, but when we were doing a show, I said that, you know, I go through various periods of depression where I'm afraid that Barack Obama will get reelected, and then I hear that, you know, oh, no, wait, he's behind in the polls. I'm like, oh, I'm so excited because thank God he's not going to be elected. And they're like, and Romney's ahead, and you're like, oh, God, no, not him, you know. Oh, maybe Obama could pull this out. You know, it's just, it's terrible, the whole thing.
That's the advantage of being a constitutionalist. I'm not on that roller coaster, baby. I hate both of the idea that either one of them could win.
I think there's definitely freedom in that, Randy, but, you know, we also have to be, you know, realists. And unless we can inspire people to vote for Jill Stein and take those electoral votes away from Obama and bring him below 270, odds are one of those two morons is going to be the next president, which may not be the worst thing because the next 4 years are going to be absolutely terrible, and we can always point fingers and blame it on one of those two idiots. And then, you know, with a strong showing for third parties, which is why on Tex and Rex we love the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party and even the Green Party, with a strong showing for third parties, and we can really, really get to work November 7th for 2014. And 2016. One thing I wanted to just point out to both of you, because you were talking about Dr. Stein's avoidance of the Constitution, which I do agree with you. Socialists despise the Constitution because it limits them. But I've got this interesting quote from Judge Learned Hand, and he says, "What do we mean when we say that first of all we seek liberty? I often wonder whether we do not rest our hopes too much upon constitutions, upon laws, and upon the courts. Liberty lies in the hearts of men and women. When it dies there, no constitution, no law, no court can save it." And I think that that is a great statement for exactly what we're witnessing here. This third party move that many of us are being attacked for because we're not towing the line is the lifeblood of liberty in this country. It is the most important thing there is, because if we keep playing the duopoly game, we are letting liberty die in our hearts. And if it dies in our hearts, then the oligarchy wins, not because they're more powerful, not because they have more money, but because we abdicated our sovereignty. And I think that tonight's debate indicated that America is not ready to fold and go the way of Rome. Not now, not this year.
And not if I have anything to do with it.
What's that?
I said, and not if I have anything to do with it.
Well, we know how, you know, quiet and soft-spoken you are, so we've got that going for us.
we have a few minutes, Rex, and you get the sound cues, and I don't, so I just watch the clock. But that is still very true. And the problem that we're having is that I don't think in our current public schools the next generation is being taught the principles of liberty. They're being taught the principles of scarcity and getting what you can by any means necessary, and screwing over the next guy and mocking the person who has the unpopular view and that type of thing. And so we have got to get back to the principles of liberty, and we have to get back to free and open discussion and free and open debates. You know, we really, the thing that bothers me, okay, so I'm a historian. My original degree was classics, right, which is Latin and Greek, ancient Greek, and mostly history, right? Okay, so I learned the languages, obviously, but also I was very interested in the history. And the thing is, they had democracies back in the ancient world. They had republics in the ancient world. And then they lost them, okay? And they lost them for a variety of reasons, which we don't have enough time to go into. But once they were gone, they didn't come back. And they didn't come back for 2,000 years. And this, our nation, is the longest-lasting form of democracy, okay? So, yes, we are a republic, but we are a republic with a you know, enshrined in, there are democratic principles around our republic, right? Because there are problems with democracies. And if you study ancient history, you'll understand what they are, right? So we have a republic with democratic forms. But if it goes away, we lasted longer than anybody in the ancient world did, using democratic forms to accomplish our republic. Okay, so we've done the best because our founding fathers did the best. Now, if you think about that, we doing the best, how short a time democracy and the republic and all that kind of stuff was flourishing in the ancient world, right? But yet
absolutely,
we still read about it because that was
Tex,
the most, that was the best
Tex,
time in all of human history. Go ahead.
Tex, we're going to go into overtime, but real quick, we've got about 30 seconds left. Thank you all for listening. Please follow us in Blog Talk Radio. Listen to the archives, download the MP3, share it with your friends. Check out Constitutional Conservatives Unite tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Tex and Rex will be back 10 p.m. Thursday, and we have some special guests potentially lined up, so we'd love to see you 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And please go to freeandequal.org and make sure you vote for Goode and Johnson to get them to next week's debate. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
All right, we are now in recording time, and we've got a couple of callers. I don't know if they were just listening or if they want to come in, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them in. Caller, if you just want to listen, just let me know. I'll remute your mic. But area code 386, you are live with Tex and Rex. Who are you, and what's on your mind about the debate?
Well, this is Cindy Todd. How are you doing, guys?
Hey, Cindy.
Hey,
how are
Cindy,
you?
Cindy, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You watched the debate tonight?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
And I do like Virgil Goode, but I disagree on one thing with you guys. You said you liked his very quick, short answers. I wanted him to expound more because, you know, you guys and most of us know what the NDAA is because we've been politically informed. A lot of people that listened to those debates last night, they don't know what Agenda 21 is. They don't know what NDAA is. There's a lot of things they don't know. And I think that the more we can use our time on the air to inform the people about things they do need to worry about and they don't know it, I think we need to use that time in the best way that we can. I can tell you this. I don't agree either. I think that Newt would have used every minute of that to demolish NDAA.
Cindy, just so that you know, I talked to Virgil Goode after the debate, and I actually made that point to him. I said, you know, I love the succinct nature and all of that to that what you said, but I said, you kind of squandered squandered another minute or so where you could have expounded upon that or used that time to expound on another point that you wanted to make. I said, you had time that you did not utilize. I said, if I had any critique of what your debate tonight, it was just that you did not fully utilize the time that you had available, and I would have suggested that you would have, you know, gone down some road and expounded upon the idea just like you mentioned.
Yeah, but I do have to say I did like his comment. Where they, you know, they got into that college education thing, you know, and trying to make it a big issue out of that debate. And I mean, they went on and on about that stupid issue. And he just said, you know, look, you got four candidates that you can vote for if you want free college education. Don't vote for me if you want that.
That was awesome. But of course, they did that because, you know, they had that kid stand up and ask that question. You know, what's my future for college and all this? You know, so I know that's why they
did
that.
What is the government going to do for me to help me?
Yeah,
I got an idea. How about nothing? How about it does nothing? How about you help yourself and you pull your own act together, right? You got it together enough to go ask this question on national stage.
Well, here's the one point that Virgil, I think, kind of failed to make, because I know this is I'm pretty certain that this is Virgil's position. Get rid of the Federal Department of Education. Let that money go back to the states, and, you know, some of that issue resolves itself. Now, certainly, you know, a state like Illinois is doing bad because because we've even got the lottery system that's supposed to be subsidizing education, and it's only getting worse, not better. So, you know, the centralized use of funds for education is not the answer. It's causing more of a problem than it's of anything. So I know that Virgil's position was get rid of the Federal Department of Education. I wish he would have mentioned that in association with that, because that would have freed up funds to go back to the state and make things better for them.
Well, you know, and I say this about, you know, hey, how about nothing? It's like, oh, my God, that's so heartless. I mean, how could you say that? Look, I already said on the show, you know, what a disaster it's been, the government, quote, helping. The government doesn't help. It is a bull in a china shop. The government's going to help you with your home mortgage, right? What does that create? A home mortgage bubble. The government's going to help you, you know, with your student loans, right? What's that create? A college tuition bubble, right? And you know what? The college tuition bubble isn't even enough for these guys. So for you guys in college listening to this, or people who have kids in college, the professors now, they're in on the textbook racket, right? Where every year a new version of the textbook comes out, and that new version costs $300. And when you go to sell it back, because I spent a lot of time in college, when you go to sell that thing back, it sells back for $5. So you bought it for $300, you sell it back for $5. You know what? I bet if you just poured gasoline on the thing and you burned it, you would probably get more enjoyment than you would out of that $5. Okay? Because what they do is every year there's a new edition, but do they change anything? Is calculus changing this fast? Oh, how can we keep up with calculus, right? It's rapidly changing. This thing was invented like 300 years ago. They came up with it, okay? It's the same mathematics. All they do is change the order of the question. And then they assign them, and they just say, answer this question, that question, or that question, right? And so if you have the wrong edition, you're answering the wrong question. And you know what the old edition cost? If you buy last year's edition, it's $15. That's how much that textbook cost, right? But right. The new edition, $280. They're ripping you off, man. I mean, not only are they screwing you on the tuition because the government is giving you, quote, free money, which here's the deal. Not only do you owe the actual money that you borrowed to go to school, but you've got to pay that back directly. But also, as a taxpayer, now that you're a job holder and a taxpayer, you're paying for the damn money that you borrow. Okay, you're the one who's on the hook. Who did you borrow it from? You borrowed it from yourself. You borrowed it twice, dumbass. I mean,
that's the point that I think I have really appreciated that Gary Johnson made. I think he could have made it a little bit more clearly, but I think he did good on it, that guess what? Free is not free. It's costing us. It's not free. It's funded by the taxpayers. So, you know, this notion that you're going to get free education is absolutely garbage.
Yep.
And they spent a lot of time. You know, these were three liberal. Well, you know, Gary Johnson has liberal leanings in some places.
You want
but basically, this was a chance for liberals to get their agenda out there. And, oh, my gosh. Am I still on, guys?
Yeah, you're still here.
Oh, okay.
You're here. Yeah, you've got the floor. You're taking us there.
I thought my phone died. Anyway, they focused on issues that were very liberal issues. They didn't even go into things that we would consider important, in the conservative movement. And I was a little disappointed with that because a lot of things that Virgil could have said tonight would have resonated with a lot of the viewers that were out there that were conservatives that were interested in that third party. But they didn't get to hear about their issues being – they didn't get to hear their issues discussed.
That's a very good point. And, by the way, I talked to Virgil after the debate, and apparently he was prepared for a couple of questions that would have gotten some of those points and positions out there, but for some reason they either asked a different question or asked a question differently that didn't allow him to get that particular message out. And so he did make a mention to me that something was amiss and he wasn't sure what happened there himself.
Yeah, I really noticed the lacking in that, and that they focused mainly on what made the liberals look good in liberal eyes, but didn't do anything for Virgil Good. And as some cases, Johnson either, in the eyes of conservatives. But anyway, I tell you what, that...
But that may have actually saved my life, because I'm telling you, when Virgil said he was not going to fund Planned Parenthood, I was the only one that said, woo, yeah! And everybody else around me booed and started giving me evil stares. So it's probably a good thing they didn't go down any more of those roads.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Jill Stein, though, she made the comment that we were never going to win the hearts of the Muslims by bombing Iraq, you know. And I just wanted to stand up and scream, because this is a pet peeve issue with me. And I hear this even in all the conservative circles, go where you may, there's too many people who think that we can appease Muslims. It cannot be done. They have a goal, that's to take over the world. That goal has never changed. It never will change. And their movement is just getting bigger and bigger. At one time, we thought there was maybe 20% of Muslims that might engage in terrorism or, you know, even suicide bombing. Now it looks like there's more than 60% who would actually be involved in terrorism, or at least support it.
That's a fairly inaccurate statistic, Cindy. I don't know where you got it from, but the fact is that you're talking about over a billion people. I don't think that there are 600 million Muslims who want to strap on a bomb and kill us. But it doesn't take that many.
Not that they would strap on a bomb and kill you, because that would already be being done. I'm just saying that they would be involved in terrorism in some way, either hiding someone who was a terrorist, or supporting them monetarily, or dancing in the streets after they commit something.
I agree with you. And I think that the fundamental problem is that it is a imperialist plundering ideology. But most Muslims don't even really practice it, just as most Christians and Jews don't practice their faith either. But I think the problem is that our idiotic intervention is swelling the ranks. And I think that what we need to do is start taking care of Americans. If you got people like the Gunny here, and you bring them home and you put a weapon in their hand and you tell them, look, when these guys show up, take them out, I think we'd all be a hell of a lot safer. Wouldn't you agree with that, Gunny?
one kill, baby. Hey, listen, guys, I appreciate that. You know, I said this time and time again, and I appreciate all that you're doing. I'm going to have to cut out of here. We're going to stop and grab a bite before we head on the rest of the way down the road. And hey, God bless you all for what you're doing. And I'm real excited about what was accomplished tonight. We demonstrated it is a real debate. People heard real issues, and they heard real answers to those issues. Now, whether you agree with them or not, you know, that's a different story. But you actually heard answers to the issues and real issues that were asked. So I'm pretty excited about it. I'm kind of I'm somewhat interested and kind of excited to see what we're going to get out of that debate in D.C. So, folks, go vote. As they say, vote early and vote often. So,
yep. Absolutely. Well, Randy, thank you for calling in and giving us insights, to what actually happened there that we maybe didn't get to see on the screen, and we'll see you around. And if you're going to make it here to the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway, for the debate next week, make sure you let me know.
Absolutely. Well, God bless you guys, and we're out of here. Have a great one.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Cindy, we had another caller, but it looks like they dropped. So you have the undivided attention of Tex and Rex for the next 3 minutes, and then we're going to drop. So what else was on your mind about the debate?
Well, one other thing just occurs to me about the third-party candidates. You know, you guys have been all talking, you know, positively, and we're hopeful about strides that we can make during this election cycle, knowing that we probably can't win anything, but we might be able to get a reputation going, get some steam going, maybe bring in some people into the third party, into the Constitutional Party, and maybe do something in 2000, 2014, 2016, you know. And it just occurred to me that what happened to us in the Republican Party, what they did to us at the convention, they basically, what we did was we had a strategy. We had, new supporters had a strategy, how to get new elected. It was a good strategy, and the strategy would have won. But what they did was they changed rules on us at the end. It's like you have a football team, and the football team has this great strategy to win the game. And they get down to the goal line. They cross over the goal line. They've got a touchdown. They're yelling and screaming. And then all of a sudden, the guys from the other team and the officials get together and they say, we're going to change the goal line. You didn't just make a touchdown. You got to go beyond that line over there. We're gonna change the goal line on you. So then you didn't really win after all. And that's exactly kind of what happened to us. They changed the goal line. They moved the goal line. And so we couldn't get there with our plan. And I worry about, you know, if we come up with a plan to get a third party going, and what's going to happen in the future? Are they going to change the, are they going to move the stupid goal again on us? I mean, I'm getting kind of disappointed, if you know what I mean.
Well, the thing is, Cindy, look, they're nominee. So there are the, quote, powers that be, or the leadership of this party, right? Okay. And they decided before this whole entire election season started, and they probably, most likely, 100% agreed in 2008 with Mitt Romney that if you drop out and if you let McCain be the guy, we'll make you the guy the next time. So they're just fulfilling their orders, right? They already signed paperwork and, you know, did a blood oath in the dark and whatever the heck else, and they told Romney, you're going to be the guy, right? But the thing is, nobody likes Romney, and nobody wanted Romney. But they're like, don't worry, we control everything, and so we're the puppeteers, and we'll make it all happen. We got Karl Rove on Fox News telling people what to think. People seem to trust Karl Rove, even though he sucks at politics and elections. He can barely win one to save his life. And also, he happens to run the largest PAC for the Republicans, and so we'll use that, and we'll get you over the top. Well, the thing is, it turned out people hated Romney more than they expected.
Mm-hmm.
Because being in Washington, they think it's all just a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and they think that people don't actually believe anything. They just vote for Jersey. The people are idiots. They're dumb, stupid idiots, and as long as you say the right words, which are like the keys to the locks of their brain, you can unlock them, and then all of a sudden they're on your side. Well, it turned out it didn't work this way because they drummed up so much fear around Barack Obama, some of it legitimate, some of it not, that people actually, they woke people up. They're like, oh, God, we used too much hocus pocus on these people. Like, they're freaked out, you know. And you know what? When they look at Romney, Romney is the guy who created Obamacare that we've so demonized that now I don't think they're going to vote for our guy, right? And they started realizing at the convention after convention, like, people hate Romney. What are we going to do? We have to be the puppet masters. We have to be in control. We are the Wizard of Oz. How is the Wizard of Oz going to make this happen? And they're like, okay, put everyone on buses at the convention. Get them on buses and send them around the city and don't bring them to the convention. And we'll replace them with Romney bots. And that's what they did. And so the thing is, are you going to be complicit in this or are you not? Okay? And so when we're talking about third parties, we are doing two things at the same time, which is, look, I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican my whole life. I've worked for the party. I love the party. I love a lot of the candidates in the party. I've always hated the Republican Party leadership. I've always thought it's got no spine. It's lackluster. It's incestuous with the Democrat Party. And you know what? I don't see it changing. And I see it just screwed over its biggest chance to become the next big thing in American politics. We have the Ron Paul movement. Join this party, right? All you had to do is make Ron Paul the vice president. The vice president doesn't do anything. Look at Joe Biden, for God's sakes, right? I mean, how hard can this job be? Just make Ron Paul the vice president. All of a sudden, you get all these votes, right? If you had Newt Gingrich at the top, you could go transform Washington, get all the votes, broaden the base, and the Republican Party would be, you know, the hottest thing since a Denny's franchise in America, you know? Oh, my God, look at what we're doing. But you know what?
Hang on.
I learned the Republican Party is not interested in that. The Republican Party is not interested in victory. It's not interested in winning. All it's interested in is compromising with the Democrat Party. So you know what? I don't trust it anymore. I don't trust it, and I don't believe it because it screwed me too many times. I've been in this thing my entire life. This isn't the first time I've been screwed over, right? Y'all get screwed over. That happens, right? But this time it was pretty egregious. And at what point can you say this cannot stand? Well, Mitt Romney, it cannot stand. At this point, this far, no further. You know, what can you do? Okay, so I'm going third party at the top of the ticket. There's a lot of Republicans I'm supporting down ticket, but you know what? I'm so angry and disillusioned with this party that just because it has an R by its name, down ballot, doesn't mean I support it anymore, okay? Because I'm tired of letting rhinos through the fences thinking it's all going to be okay. And then they find these rhinos, like, hey, we got one through the fence. Now he's the golden boy. Hey, let's hoist him up on our shoulders. You know, let's burn some incense by this guy, you know, cover him. You know, he's our new guy. And then he's like Mitt Romney.
Yep.
You can't let even one bad one through because that's what this party's about. And I think the Republican Party has just poured gasoline on itself. It's immolating itself in this election. Mitt Romney may actually win, but it's only because Barack Obama is so bad. And the thing is, I actually fear, and I'm just going to tell you straight out, look, I hate Barack Obama. He never should have been president in the first place. He's terrible at this job, okay? But I fear that Mitt Romney will get elected far more than I fear that Barack Obama will get reelected, because when Barack Obama gets reelected, there's a whole army across this country that is just geared into what the Democrat Party is doing that is wrong, and when we see it, we just focus on it. But if you let Mitt Romney through, A, the Republican Party doesn't learn that it made a mistake. It thinks that, yes, Republicans will cave, and they will vote for a party that will collaborate with the Democrat Party, you know, easily. And B, everybody goes back to sleep, and they say, oh, it's a Republican, so now everything's okay. And Mitt Romney may be a Republican, but he's not a conservative.
Sure.
And he doesn't believe any of the things that you and I believe. Mitt Romney's core belief is that Mitt Romney should be king of the world. And that's it.
That's right.
Well, I don't know if he would call it king. Maybe bishop.
Well, emperor. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I cannot. I'm done. I can't go along with this thing anymore. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be the guy. Right, I don't want to be the one who stands up and says the emperor has no clothes, the Republican Party is full of shit. I don't want to be that person, but I am.
You know, we have such a huge mountain to climb over, though, to get people. I mean, I can't even tell my family who I'm going to vote for. They for me to even say that I don't support Mitt Romney, you know, they're like scared to death. Oh my gosh! What if you guys vote for these other people
Let me tell you something, okay? So there comes a time in life when life is like, look, are you for real or are you fake? Right? I just want to know. And you didn't ask for this. All of a sudden, it's like you got the sunshine shining on you, and then somebody puts like a magnifying glass, and it's like, holy crap, it's hot under this magnifying glass, right? And like, are you for real or are you a joke? That's what's being asked, okay? So when I was in Washington, I had one of those situations because I decided that, well, what happened is in 1977, they created something called the Department of Energy, and they hired everybody in a day. Well, everybody within, like, a short period of about 2 or 3 months, okay? And the normal term of federal bureaucratic service is 30 years, and I happened to be working at this thing when they were having, as the people described it, mass hiring at the Department of Energy. Well, guess what they were having in 2007? Mass firings. Well, they weren't fired. They were just mass retirements is what it was. And so the guy who was the director of my office and his vice director, they were eligible for retirement on the same day, and they begged the other guy who wanted out more than anything. He's like, fuck this place. I hate it. I hate it so much. I don't even want to be here. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. No, don't call. Don't call. I'm not staying. I'm not staying. And they begged him to stay for another month, right? At least, please stay for another month. So he stayed for another month, okay? Right? And then he left. And then what happened? They turned everything over to somebody. Who are they going to turn over to? They turned over to me, right? Okay, so my office has certain responsibilities.
one of the things it's responsible for, I don't know why I'm going to get this specific, but it's responsible for keeping track of all the international agreements that the Department of Energy has with everybody throughout the world, right? Did you know, were you aware, the Department of Energy, which is a $24 billion a year operation, does not maintain a list of the international agreements that it signed, why it assigned them, how much money it's spending under them, when they're up for renewal, and what in the hell the damn purpose was in the first place. Just, it doesn't exist. Nobody knows. Right?
Wow.
And so I
That's
said,
unnerving.
Look, if I'm going to, because everybody retired, I didn't ask to be manager. I don't want to be in charge. You know, but just all of a sudden everybody's dead. You know, like, oh, my God, it's like a battle. Holy crap, it's called a field promotion. Yeah, well, you know, the guy who's in charge, yeah, he got a bayonet and a brain, so now you're the dude. Oh, okay, so I guess I'm learning leadership qualities all of a sudden. You know, and I said, look, we need to have a list of what these things are because having worked on them, it's problematic when somebody comes into my office and they say we have an international agreement where there's millions of dollars of cooperation going on underneath it that's going to expire next week and you have to get it through. And also, I can't get it through unless the State Department signs off, and the State Department doesn't sign off on anything in a week, right? But anyway, that's your job, so good luck with that. So I said, let's put a list together. Well, you know what? The Department of Energy doesn't want. They don't want a list, right? So they came after me. That essentially is what I'm getting at. They come after you, and they attack you, and they attack you personally, and they try to destroy and besmirch your reputation and who you are as a human being. And there are very few people who can actually stand up to this and who don't really care what people say. So what I'm trying to say is people will attack you, but the thing is, are you doing the right thing? And if you're doing the right thing, you have nothing to fear. And so in this election, I've already been through fire, okay? So I don't care. I don't care about Mitt Romney. I don't care if I don't vote for Mitt Romney. I don't care if people are upset that I don't vote for Mitt Romney. And I don't care what they say about me because they're nobody and they're nothing. And they've never actually had to stood up for anything in their entire life. And so you know what? I'm not voting Mitt Romney, and I'm not contributing to Barack Obama winning. Mitt Romney and the Republican Party leadership is contributing to Mitt Romney or to Barack Obama winning, if he does, which I don't think it's he will, but he may. But if he does win, it's the Republican Party leadership that made that happen because the Republican Party and the base of this party wanted a conservative. We were fired up for an actual real conservative with actual accomplishments. His name is Newt Gingrich. And instead, they gave us a crap sandwich, to quote Alan West. That's what they did. And they said, if you don't vote for our crap sandwich, then you're letting Barack Obama win. No, you're letting Barack Obama win because you betrayed me. And I'm not part of the Republican Party team anymore, right? Because they did this to me.
It's the crap sandwich against the diarrhea sandwich.
Exactly. I mean, what
I don't want
it
either way. All right, folks, we're 30 minutes into recording time. Cindy, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your insights with us. And folks, we're very excited about what we witnessed today. We saw a real debate, and it was very exciting. You might not agree with everything that was said, but the beautiful thing is that they actually answered the questions. They were real questions. They were real answers, and it was unscripted and actually as debates should be. And keep in mind that both Mitt Obama and Barack Romney were invited and ignored the debate. We also encourage all of you to follow the show on Blog Talk Radio. You'll get notifications in your email when we are broadcasting. And please check back with us 10 p.m. Eastern Thursday. We've got a couple of interesting guests that you would like to hear from about the coming election. And precisely, we're going to be talking about what happened in Tampa and throughout the entire primary process with the corruption and possibly the corruption we're going to be see coming up in a couple of weeks. And also, we want to encourage you to go to freeandequal.org and vote for Virgil Goode and Gary Johnson to be in the debate, which will be October 30th, that's next week, in Washington, D.C., which will be the last debate before we go vote. Tex, you got any closing thoughts?
You know, I don't know. I think I said my piece.
All right. Sounds good. Well, like I said, we'll be back 10 p.m.
Thursday, remember that this is your country. We have a constitution. We have principles, and it's about liberty. Your power does not come from the government. It comes from God, and it is up to you to exercise right judgment in restoring liberty to this land. Don't vote duopoly. Don't vote oligarchy. Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are the same exact mess that we've been fed for so long that has almost brought this country to its knees. Vote for liberty. Send a message. If we don't turn this around soon, it could get pretty ugly. And after what we saw today, there are millions of Americans who are truly looking at alternate candidates. And this is exactly how the Republican Party came to be way back in 1860. And we can do it again. This is Texan Rex signing off.
Bye.
See you, Cindy. The flames of liberty will never die. Till next time.
Hey. Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
When you do your show Thursday, can you make sure you guys do a like a chronological order kind of thing about what happened during the primaries and then during the convention? Because I got people that I want to tell the story to, but in order to tell them the story, I have to send them to like 16 million links and websites and everything and articles and stuff. If we could just like break it down and put it in chronological order, what happened at what time, that would really help.
I don't know if we're going to be chronological, but we will certainly be on point and tell the story in a way that'll make it clear to anybody who is interested in knowing the truth. But, you know, it's kind of going to be on the format of our guests.
Well, as a frustrated historian, I definitely can talk about the chronology of it. You know, I deal with things in my daily life where people don't understand that, you know, there's a chronology issue, which is people don't see into the future perfectly at the time that they are. And so they see things that may or may not materialize. And so the chronology actually is very important. And, yeah, I mean, look, this election to me is the most horrific lost opportunity that the Republican Party has ever had. And I think this is the point that for a lot of people who are in the Republican Party, that it just went off the cliff. It just absolutely betrayed everything that it said that it ever believed in. And at this point, I don't trust the Republican Party, whereas before I wouldn't question. I mean, there were always factions in the party, right? But, you know, we're all on the same side. But this time, it's just like we're not on the same side. We're not on the same page. And I have enemies in the party, people that they need to go. You know, I can't continue to be in this party. And I think what you're saying about the chronology is important to understand that story. But I think what they did to Newt Gingrich, I mean, personally, it's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely unexcusable, and I'm not going to be part of a party that does that type of thing to its best player.
Right.
Because what that tells me is that they're corrupt.
Yeah.
Because what is Newt Gingrich's inherent sin? He cut the budget, right? Oh, Newt Gingrich is causing all this problem with Bill Clinton. Okay, well, Bill Clinton had some serious problems, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Newt Gingrich is bringing the fight to him. What is John Boehner doing? He's nothing. He's nobody. He might as well not even show up for his job. If John Boehner didn't come to Capitol Hill anymore, would anybody even know that he wasn't there? No. John Boehner literally is the man who wasn't there. And they're like, oh, Newt Gingrich, yeah, he caused all the controversy. Okay, well, Newt Gingrich is up against Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton is a political genius. Okay, you know what? Newt Gingrich convinced Bill Clinton to balance the budget, and he did. And to this day, Bill Clinton claims credit for that. But Bill Clinton didn't do it. Newt Gingrich did it, right? The Republican Party doesn't claim credit for it because you know why? They would have to say a positive word about Newt Gingrich. Well, for God's sakes, what did Newt Gingrich do that was so unforgivable that you won't give him any credit?
Yeah. He made him fulfill their promise, their contract. That's what he did that was so horrible.
Exactly. And you know what? If that's the party is done because it's built on a lie. And that's
I can't figure out why is he still farting around with those people? Why doesn't he get the heck out of there and start another party you know how a third party that was formed with Newt Gingrich at the helm would absolutely flourish?
Not this time around. But
well,
it would eventually.
No,
but I think he built the Republican Party. I think that he thinks that it can be saved. And it might be, and, you know, it's certainly worth a shot, but what it'll require is for us to pummel the crap out of Romney, because if we give him our assent, then they'll never change.
That's right.
Romney has to lose. Now, look, I currently think Romney's going to win, and that's a nightmare for me, because Romney's going to win, and he's going to enact all of Obama's policies, and Republicans are going to cheer him as he does it, because he's a Republican. Right?
Yep.
But if Obama did it, they would, oh, my God, this is the worst thing ever. But because it's Romney, it's going to be okay in their mind. That's what bothers me. And that's why, to me, Mitt Romney is a bigger enemy than Obama, because at least Obama is in, you know, the, quote, enemy camp, right?
Right.
But Romney is wearing my jersey, sitting in my foxhole, and he's got a machine gun at my back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, I'm on your side. But don't you cross me. Don't you start talking that conservative crap. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't talk about liberty, because that's not what I'm about. You know, it's a problem. It's a real problem. And the reason Gingrich won't leave is because third parties are historically ineffective. And Newt Gingrich has a lot of cachet within the party. I mean, Newt Gingrich helped build Michelle Bachmann, right? She's one of his proteges.
Yep.
And so he's not going to abandon it.
The Republican Party started as a third party.
Yeah.
You can do it. It's doable. But, you know, it's just hard to tell what would be better, to purify
the
question,
inside? I mean, if you look at Newt Gingrich's strategy, ask yourself this. What is the base of support that John Sununu has in the Republican Party?
Mitt Romney and Rince Bubis.
Yeah. Who else supports these guys? Everybody who's anybody in the Republican Party knows that John Sununu is a sellout, big government, rhino, jackass, Republican who doesn't belong here. But yet he's pulling the strings. How long can he continue to pull the strings if the liberty movement is increasingly taking over the party and the Gingrich people, of which I include myself, and now I include myself also in the liberty movement, is staring at this guy in the eyes like, who the hell are you? And why don't you step away from the controls real slowly, like, so that we can all see your hands and you're done. Because this isn't working for anybody. The old generation, they got to pass over the controls, because whatever the Republican Party used to be is not what it is today. And if they try to continue to be the Rockefeller Republicans, there's not a market for that party anymore, and it's going to go away, and there will be a third party. So now I have one foot on land and one foot in sea. One foot on land is the foot I have in the Republican Party, but you know what? I don't trust it anymore. And so now I got one foot in the sea, looking over at, you know, what I'm going to do with third parties if I have to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to vote. I can't vote for Mitt Romney. I just can't do it. So
why did the party do this to us? This should have been our finest hour, right?
You know why?
Well, of course I know why. Because it's because they're bought and paid for. That's why.
Yep. Yep.
But it's the grassroots. How many Americans are there out there, right, looking at this thing?
Very well, not more than ever, but not as many as we need. More than ever, but not as many as we need, which is why our work is really only beginning. Because, you know, the fact is, you know, are we going to pretend to be, you know, we're going to vote for this party or that party and get the same crap? Are we going to be Republicans? Are we going to, you know, go find another party? Or are we just going to be conservatives? Because if you're a conservative and you stick to conservative principles and you stand up for those and you get others to do so, because 40% of Americans actually identify as conservatives, then we'll become the dominant force even if we're in three parties. And that's the whole point, is that conservatism and liberty and the Constitution is what we're about. It is time to throw away this vestigial elephant tail that we have, where we think we're Republicans because that's what the party used to stand for, or that's what the party gave us in Reagan and Gingrich, because clearly they've gone 180 degrees away from that.
Look, if you got to lose in 2016 because we're going to lose in 2012. Even if Mitt Romney wins, you're going to lose in 2012, right? Because Mitt Romney doesn't believe what we believe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we've already lost, okay? So if you've got to lose in 2016 in order to create a party that can actually win in 2020, then that's fine, right? So we all got to go on our own journey. But at the end, we're going to meet up in some sort of either new party or reborn Republican Party. But the current Republican Party and the people that are leading it, they are Pied Pipers, and they are a bunch of charlatans. They are lying to you. They're lying to me, and they have been for my whole life when I've been supporting these guys. And at a certain point, you got to get off the crazy train, and I'm off. I'm just done. I'm not on their team anymore. And whatever
and
their
you're
team
not alone.
Is, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not on
is,
their team either.
You know, it's going nowhere because
as because
I said
they're
the
not conservative.
No, they're not conservative. Karl Rove, who I think is one of the main puppet masters of this whole thing, right, has this idea that we got to get these moderates. And his idea is there's only the Democrat and the Republican Party, right? And so somewhere in the center, there's all these moderates who are like, why can't they just get along? And if I could find someone so moderate and so tender, maybe I could put him in a velvet suit. Could Romney debate in a velvet suit, you know, and just so tender, you know, and get him under some red lights or something, maybe smoke a cigar on, you know, the end of a stick or something, you know, and he then would appeal to these moderates. Well, the country is not being driven by moderates because there's no market for a brand in between the Republicans and the Democrats. They're like, hey, I don't like that we're becoming socialists. Well, I'm not opposed to socialism. I just wish we weren't going socialist so fast, right? That's not a brand in American politics. There are people who are revolted by what's going on in Washington and the state control that's happening and the move towards socialism. Socialism being a euphemism for state control, right?
Yep.
And so the Republican Party has lost voter identifications from the 1990s until today. They've gone from whatever it was, 32% down to 24 or 21%. I'd have to recheck the math on that. But people are leaving the Republican Party for a reason, and the reason that they're leaving it is because it's become the Rhino Party and not the Conservative Party. But voter identification as independent has shot up from, you know, whatever it was, 20-something to 38%, right? So the people, but yet Democrat voter identification has stayed steady from 32 to 31, okay? So no one's leaving the Democrat Party, but they're leaving the Republican Party and they're becoming independents. Why are they doing that? Because Karl Rove and people like him are convincing Republicans that they need to be more moderate. The Republicans don't want to be more moderate. There's no market for the moderate Republican brand. They're destroying themselves at an alarming rate.
And that's why Karl Rove is so wrong with his little attempt to get the moderates, because he thinks he's reaching out to those independent voters thinking they're all moderates. But there's two kinds of independent voters. There's Democrats who are even farther left than the Democrats want to be, and so they go into the independent party. Or there's Republicans who are more conservative than they want the party to be, and so they end up going into the independent party. So you've got liberals and conservatives in this independent party. I don't see a whole lot of moderates there. And yet he thinks if we reach out to the independent party, we're going to get moderates. No.
Well, see,
if you
want
to
notice
get the independent vote, you've got to go conservative.
You can sense the confusion that's going on, because when Karl Rove or any of these guys that talk about basically non-party identified votes, right, they call them the moderates and the independents, right? But they always say the moderates first, because the moderates, that's code word for collaborationist. All these moderates, they want the Republicans to work with the Democrats. That's what Karl Rove believes. But the moderates, there is no population of moderates. There's not this huge horde of moderates. It's the independents, and the independents are independents because they hate both parties. And the reason they hate both parties is because both parties are about concentrated power, right? And concentrated power wants to pretend, make up this faux, you know, population of support of people like, why can't you guys just get together and just take all the power, and then you can do whatever you wanted, and then you can fix everything, No, the largest body of support is in the independents, and the independents want to walk away from centralized power and bring it back to diffusion of power, to state power, to local power. That's where we're going. But Karl Rove doesn't want to acknowledge that because absolute power, well, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yep.
So they don't
want to. He's the one at the head of Crossroads and running around like he's some kind of independent commentator when all he's doing is raking in the money, putting in these candidates that further the agenda of the imperial presidency, of the corporatist greed, the fiat regime. I mean, he is like the guy who's destroying the country while he's got this happy Republican face on, and those of us who think that the Republican Party's conservative are falling for it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's laughing all the way to the bank at all these people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what does he care?
He's not the only one, too. I mean, there's a lot of people. Even Krauthammer's been, you know, during the primary season.
Well,
he's right along with Krauthammer.
Charles is really good friends with Elliot Abrams. I can just tell you that straight out, okay? So I've met Elliot, you know, many times. I've met his wife. You know, helped her out with a certain endeavor that they were involved in. And Charles and Elliot are friends. And they have, from the beginning of this thing, right? So I don't know if it's a separate agenda or if it's part of the larger Republican agenda, because it's not like, you know, they're not going to tell me, you know. But their thing has been to shut Newt Gingrich down from the get-go, right?
Right.
Why? And that's what gets me. Why? You could be winning this thing in a landslide, because what I've realized is they don't want political power. They want political power on certain conditions, right? And the conditions are that what Newt Gingrich is offering, Newt Gingrich can get them political power, but they don't want the political power that Newt Gingrich is offering, because Newt Gingrich's political power is taking on the existing, you know, power structure, balancing the budgets. He understands intricately how Washington works. It's his life's work to understand it, right? And God bless him for it. And they're like, we don't want that because we have our hand in the till. Somehow they do. They have their hand in the till. I don't know how, right? But why would they be opposed? If all they want is power, they would go with the guy who could give it to them. That would be Newt Gingrich. What they want instead is the ingenue, you know, the Mitt Romney, who doesn't know shit about Washington. They'll get him in, and they'll tell him what to do, because they'll be the puppet masters, and he's the puppet.
Right.
And what they want is
power.
More money.
It's all about power.
Yeah. And the problem is Newt Gingrich is too powerful, because Newt Gingrich is a mensch, you know? Newt Gingrich is his own man, and that's what they're afraid of. They need someone who doesn't know what the hell they're doing and who will go play his part, and that's what Mitt Romney is. Mitt Romney, for all his time at Bain Capital and everything, Mitt Romney has never really run anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He moved a bunch of money around, and then he hired a bunch of hatchet men to go do the stuff for him. Mitt Romney doesn't care about anything except cash.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. All right. Well, guys,
right.
I'm going to go because I am tired, and I have to teach school tomorrow. But I hope y'all will I'll try to get in there Thursday night and hear you. And I'm going to try to tell some people that I've been trying to give them some. You know, Chris put that thing together a while back, all those different sites you could go to and see what the GOP did. But that was basically just centered around the convention. I'd like to have the whole story told from start to finish about all the stupid stuff that they did. You know,
that's hopefully what we're going to get to on Thursday. We're trying to line up a couple of guests that are going to enlighten us about those particular topics. And if not Thursday, then we'll do it on Sunday night. But we should be doing it Thursday at 10 if everything goes well.
Okay, well, get some delegates on there, like Barbara and them.
We're talking to experts, but we'll see. I mean, you know, we're gonna, you know, we got three shows, three nights a week. We got shows, so we can always do that. Typically, we don't do guests because it's just not the kind of show that we do. But this is a kind of an important thing right before the election. We're hoping to get the electoral corruption revealed.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, it was good talking to you again. It's been a long time.
Well, we're here
well,
every
thanks,
Sunday.
Thanks for calling in, and Cindy, and, you know, it was a pleasure to meet you in Florida. I'm glad we didn't totally horrify you.
No, you didn't horrify me.
Excellent. Well, that's good. And, you know, glad you dialed in, and you're always a welcome guest on our show.
And, Rex, say hello to your better half for me. Tell her I say hi.
Sure.
All right. I'll see you boys later.
Thanks, Cindy. Take care.
Bye.
Once again, this is Tex and Rex signing off.